Nick.
Gentlemen.
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine.
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here above downtown Chicago. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you can also download our and subscribe to our podcasts. Every second of every show is podcast. And you can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe. It's free and it'll automatically be delivered to your device. And you can listen at your leisure, bro. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It is Monday morning. That means my dad is going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, as we do every Monday morning. We have my dad call in and tell a joke. And Eric Childress, who normally joins us here on Monday mornings to review the movies along with Jim Liskowski. Eric had an ankle injury and was bedridden all weekend, so he didn't see any movies. So we're giving him the morning off. But Jim and I will handle all the new movies as well. So Jim will be joining us in just a few minutes. Again, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Yesterday was the Daytona 500, so we're going to be talking about racing movies. And we got some driving stories in general to talk about as well. And as you guys have, if you've been regularly listening, you know that Dan Chigrou has been taking some time off, and Ben Anderson is filling in. Ben, thank you for doing that.
Love being here.
And Dan is going to join us to talk a little bit about that time off that he's been taking. So Dan's going to join us at 4:30 to talk about what's happening. So we'll hear from Dan Chigrou, who we haven't heard from in a while. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, like I said. And we'll jump to the movie reviews in just a few minutes. Let me officially say hello. Ben, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good.
Yeah?
I was here for most of it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You
I had Blackhawks and mm-hmm. and all types of stuff. Mm-hmm. But
Blackhawks tonight, too.
Yeah.
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 So Ottawa, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be here right here on the radio station that you can hear it. And you'll be here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just
setting up shop here.
Get a cot and hang out. That's Ben hanging out here, and Vic is off this morning, so in the newsroom is David Jennings. Hello, David.
Good morning.
How are you?
Not at 100% yet, but getting there.
Okay. All right. Feel better.
Thank you, sir.
He's covering the news all morning long, there you go. So we got all the new movies to talk about, the Oscars are next week, are Sunday night. Are going to be the Oscars, and we were just talking with Carl and Lisa about that idiotic idea that they had, where they were going to have four of the categories being handed out during the commercials in order to speed up the festivities, and it was met with such outrage. People were so upset about it. They were going to like not televise Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Makeup and Hair, and Best Live Action Short. And there was just such people were so upset about the prospect of belittling some of these categories to the point where, you know, they're not going to show them on TV, that the Academy actually reversed their decision. So all of the categories will be announced on air.
Is there any such thing as realistically thinning the show?
Well, you know, well, they don't have, well, first of all, they don't have a host this year, so there won't be a 10-minute monologue at the top of the show, I'm assuming.
Hopefully.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, if they want to, they want to like make the show go faster, not showing categories on TV and doing it during the commercials is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard.
Agreed.
And maybe, if they have like unnecessary, maybe unnecessary musical numbers, cut those. I would rather see that cut. So I don't know. But I mean, award shows are, people, here's the thing. Award shows are meant to be complained about. that's they were designed so that people could get mad about them. That's the, listen, the Grammys last week, that was a 4-hour show. The Grammys was, it was 4 hours long.
Well, hey, look, we're at the point where we're willing to sit through a movie that's almost 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, well, okay.
The thing about the Grammys, though, the thing that separates the Grammys from other award shows is that they really don't care about the awards on the Grammys. It's all about the performances.
Yeah.
Like, it's more of a showcase. It's more of a showcase of music than it is. I mean, they give away the handout like 6 awards during the entire show.
It's called strutting our stuff.
Yeah, and just they're showcasing a lot of the music instead of giving the
And sometimes some of those performances can be mind-blowing.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were some good performances. There were some good performances last week during the Grammys, but man, it was long. I mean, I was like, man, okay. And then I love the fact that that they went long because of all these performances. And then when people win their award, they cut them off. Like after 2 seconds, they're like, okay, get off the stage. Well, maybe if we didn't have a 7-minute performance from this guy, beforehand, maybe we'd have a little more time for people to actually accept their awards. So I don't know.
It might be interesting if the folks that ran it and the artists all sat down and had a run through and talked about it. Yeah. All right. Look. Don't do the album versions of your songs, please.
Yeah.
Single versions.
Yeah.
Well, this way,
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, award shows are designed to make people mad. That's essentially what it is. I'll tell you what, though. One of the best award shows, one of my favorite award shows, is the day before the Oscars, and that's the Independent Spirit Awards. The Independent Spirit Awards are awesome. Those are like the independent movies, and it's awesome because it's on IFC. And every year it's the day before, and it takes place in a tent on the beach.
Really?
Oh yeah. It takes place in a tent on a beach. Everybody is like, there's no tuxes. People are just really just sort of dressed. And it's movie stars too. A lot of people who are nominated for Academy Awards are nominated for Independent Spirit Awards too. It's just that they have to be like sort of independently made movies.
Okay.
And I don't know who's hosting. Can you look up, Ben, who's hosting this year's Independent Spirit Awards? It's usually it's a very hip room, and it's really laid back. It's uncensored, so they can say, so the people presenting and the people accepting can say whatever they want. There's no censorship.
It's Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, see, she's awesome.
She's awesome.
She's great. So she's weird and awesome. And they always have like interesting, people hosting that show.
Brian Tyree and Lena Waithe.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Aubrey, wait. Where are you seeing Aubrey Plaza?
Right at the top of Google.
Oh, okay. Was it the same year though?
That's
live on IFC February 23rd.
Yeah, that would be it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's Brian Tyree.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, it's Aubrey Plaza. That's and I just went to Hollywood Reporter.
Okay.
Aubrey Plaza to host 2019 Film Independent Spirit Awards.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll see.
That's weird.
Well, anyway, it's a very cool. It's a very cool award show, and it's kind of what they're trying to do with that is it's the antithesis of the Oscars. So they're trying to be, obviously sort of anti-Oscar. It's not formal. It's really laid back. And if you want to see the greatest acceptance speech you will ever see in your life, Mickey Rourke won Best Actor for The Wrestler at the Independent Spirit Awards back in 2008. And his acceptance speech, it's on YouTube. His acceptance speech, first of all, it's like 6.5 minutes long. Then they just let him go. And it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest acceptance. I can't play it on the air because he drops F-bombs left and right.
Ah.
But it's one of the greatest, maybe the best acceptance speech I've ever seen in my life. And he didn't win the Oscar the next day. Sean Penn did. for milk, but I was hoping that that Mickey Rourke would win and then like drop F bombs on the Oscars.
That would have been amazing.
Would have been amazing. But anyway, you should check it out. That that's out there. Mickey Rourke's acceptance speech from the wrestler, the Independent Spirit Awards. It's great. Okay, we got a break here, and when we come back, Jim Laskowski is going to join us, and we'll review all the new movies and more right here on 720 WGN. Back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 o'clock. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Well, yesterday was the Daytona 500, so we're going to talk about racing movies. And then we're going to get into some actual real driving situations and talk about what pet peeves you have on the road. And I know that we can probably fill 5 hours. And if you have some crazy driving stories, we would love to hear from you. So that's going to be one of the themes this morning is driving. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And there you go. Eric Childress, who normally joins us every Monday morning, is bedridden with an ankle issue. And wasn't able to get out and see any movies, so he's not going to be with us. So Jim Laskowski and I are going to handle the movie reviews, and we got a couple of extra other things that we're going to talk about as well as the box office and all that cool stuff. Every Monday morning, Jim Laskowski and Eric Childress join me, review the new movies, and then we talk box office, and we're going to do all that. It's just Eric will not be on with us this morning, so let us welcome Jim to the show. Jim, welcome back.
Wait a second.
Be here. Happy to be here.
All right, there you go. There. I didn't have the phone up there for a second. All right. Well, welcome back, Jim. All right. So,
thank you, man.
You wanted to talk a little bit about a podcast. What's your latest podcast?
Well, yeah. So I sporadically host an interview show called Voices and Visions, which is also the website where I put up all my writing and basically anything that's kind of going on podcast-wise or even music-wise, which is voicesvisions.net. And I recently had the pleasure of interviewing one of my favorite character actresses. I recently saw her in a movie on VOD called The Clove Hitch Killer. She has a small role, and I also got to interview the director, too. But then I thought I really, really should try and interview Samantha Mathis, because she was in a very important seminal film that, you know, obviously from our conversations in the past, how it affected me, and your recommendation of this movie really, really helped me through my teenage years, and that was Pump Up the Volume. And, you know, she's had a very interesting career since then. I mean, obviously Pump Up the Volume was her breakthrough role, and boy, was she memorable in that. But she's also been in American Psycho and The American President and The Thing Called Love, Broken Arrow, and just a lot of interesting films and TV shows over the years. So I was lucky enough to talk with her for close to an hour. And she could not have been nicer and had a lot of wonderful stories, including what it's like to work with actors like River Phoenix and Christian Bale, and having to do an improvised dinner party scene with Larry David and Ricky Gervais on Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, man, she was just a blast to talk with. And people can check out that podcast episode over at voicesvisions.net.
Oh, that's great. That's great that you got to talk to her. Yeah, she's a terrific actress. Most recently, killing it on Billions on Showtime.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think, she's going to be the new season. She was talking about that as well. And I never watched The Strain, but I know she was on that too for a while.
Yep, I watched that. I watched The Strain because it was gross and it had vampires in it. So of course I watched it.
So, nice.
There you go. All right. Well, that's pretty cool. And you also sent along your favorite performances that have not been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it more and more, and, you know, over the years, there have just been, like, moments where I kind of go, I can't believe that this performance didn't get any recognition, at least from the Academy.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think critic circles would recognize a number of these performances, but there's certainly quite a few on my mind, especially since I've just been sort of thinking about acting a lot more, and I've been interviewing a lot of actors too. So.
Well, there's also, you know, I mean, it's the Oscars are indeed next week, and they're next Sunday, I should say, and so it makes sense to talk about some of these performances that were ignored by the Academy, and you know, I've mentioned this before that. You know, we've talked about actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award, and the first one that pops into my head all the time is the fact that Donald Sutherland has never been nominated for an Academy Award, which is just completely ridiculous and completely nuts.
Yeah.
But these are some of yours, and I think these are all great. Let's go through some of these. These are great performances that were not nominated for. Now, we're going to get to the new movies. I haven't seen I only saw two of the three, Jim. I didn't see Happy Death Day to You. So you can handle that one, but then you and I will review the other two. But let's get into this. Favorite performance is not nominated for an Oscar. The first one that you have here is Gene Hackman in The Conversation, which is, I think, my favorite Gene Hackman performance of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, within the past few years, I also caught up with Night Moves, and I think he's amazing in that, too. But The Conversation is just, it remains my favorite Francis Ford Coppola movie, and a lot of that has to do with Hackman's performance. It's just pitch perfect in every way.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, that year, two movies directed by Coppola were nominated for Best Picture, which is crazy. You know, I mean, that doesn't happen very often. So you had The Conversation, which was nominated for Best Picture, and Godfather Part II nominated for Best Picture, and it won Best Picture. So that's a pretty good year for Coppola. So
yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Robert Mitchum in Night of the Hunter, one of the creepiest and scariest performances of all time.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, he's always great. He's always consistent, always amazing screen presence, but there's just something about that character that just really gets under your skin in so many ways. It's such a memorable villain. Yeah. Role for him.
Yeah, no, I think it's Mitchum's best performance, and it's certainly the creepiest of the performances. And Robert Mitchum can be creepy in several different ways, but the Night of the Hunter is just, you know, and that's the movie that basically ran Charles Laughton out of town on a rail because
That was the only movie he ever did.
Yeah,
right?
It's the only movie he ever directed. Yeah, and it's a great film, but man, oh man, it was not popular with people when it came out. It was very controversial. So, one of my favorite actresses you have next here is Jennifer Jason Leigh. She was phenomenal in Georgia. She's been nominated a few times.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, she's been nominated a few times, but she wasn't nominated for this. But it's a tremendous performance for people who have not seen it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, when she performs that Van Morrison song pretty much in its entirety,
mm-hmm.
That is one of the most powerful acting moments ever for me. I mean, it tears me up.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great, man. She's always good. Always good. And, you know, it's interesting to see where her career has gone. She's had a very interesting and varied career over the years. It's always interesting to see what Jennifer Jason Leigh does next, you know? Next year is, well, I mean, you know, this one goes without saying for me, one of my favorite performances in the history of movies by my favorite actor, and that's Jeff Bridges in Fearless. He's unbelievable in that movie, and it's insane to me that particular performance doesn't get as much recognition as it deserves, and it's a movie that didn't get much recognition either.
Yeah, I think just Rosie Perez was nominated, but, I mean, everybody in that movie is phenomenal, and the screenplay is phenomenal. The score, I mean, that's one of those movies too, you know, and I've seen it like maybe a dozen times. It makes me bawl my eyes out. And a lot of that has to do with Jeff Bridges and his conviction in this performance of his. It's just one of the best movies about post-traumatic stress that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And it's a really beautiful movie, and it just destroys me every time. Like the ending of that movie just kills me every single time I watch it. Every time. So great movie. Fearless. If you've not seen it, you should. And, yeah, Peter. Now, next, you got Peter Sarsgaard in Shattered Glass, one of my favorite supporting performances of all time. He is great in that movie. I think Peter Sarsgaard's a terrific actor in general, But I think mm-hmm. Shattered Glass is the part that he has is so difficult to pull off in that movie because of the position that his character is put in. He's trying to do what's right. He's trying to be good, but everybody's against him when he takes over as editor, of the New Republic after Hank Azaria, who plays the editor that everybody loved, and Sarsgaard's character has the unlucky position of following in his footsteps and then finding out that their star reporter, their star story writer, is faking stories. And Hayden Christensen has never been better in a movie, ever. And Sarsgaard has a scene late in the movie where he confronts Chloe Sevigny in the lobby of their building, which is just phenomenal. I mean, it's one of my favorite scenes, one of my favorite scenes ever.
Yeah, same here. And that's the moment where I'm like, well, there's the scene that they're going to play at the Academy Awards.
Exactly.
If he's nominated.
That's
exactly
right. That's the scene that you would play for the nomination. Okay, Jim, hang on, all right?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Okay. Jim Leskowski is with us, and we're talking about his favorite performances that have not been nominated for an Oscar. The Oscars are Sunday night. By the way, I always take the Monday morning after the Oscars off, so I will be off a week from this morning because that's sort of my Super Bowl. So. Anyway, so we got new movies to review. We're going to get to that, plus more of the best performances not nominated for an Oscar. We got a break for the news right now, and we'll return right after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, a jokey time. As you know, Dan Shugru has been taking some time off, and Ben Anderson is filling in for him. But we will hear from Dan this morning. He's going to be in studio with us at 4:30, Dan Shugru, to talk a little bit about what's been going on. So that's going to be happening. We are going to be talking about best racing movies and driving in general and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk or text. And there you go. Right now, though, Jim Lisowski is with us. Eric's off this morning. He was unable to leave the house due to an ankle injury, so he didn't see any new movies, so he's just going to take the morning off, and we'll review the new ones. Jim and I will cover that. But before we were talking about that, we were talking about favorite performances not nominated for an Oscar. As the Academy Awards approach in less than a week, we always like to go back and look at performances that we loved and sometimes look at those performances that were ignored by the Academy. And that's what Jim put together a list of, and we're talking about great performances not nominated for an Oscar. We welcome Jim back. Jim, welcome back.
All right, great, thanks.
Okay, next on your list, we just lost this guy. Over the weekend, Bruno Ganz. You picked Bruno Ganz in Downfall, which is a great performance. And he was a terrific actor, of course, most memorably in as far as I'm concerned, Wings of Desire, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh.
But Bruno Ganz in Downfall.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean, he received a lot of acclaim for his portrayal of Hitler in that film. It's just one of those performances that when you see it, it's so larger than life, and you kind of go, well, this, and plus the Academy just loves it when people imitate figures from the past. And I was just kind of like, well, that's surprising that didn't get any love from the Academy, because it's such a good performance.
It's a great performance, yeah. The next one that you picked is one of my favorite performances of all time, Harry Dean Stanton in Paris, Texas. Harry Dean Stanton, I don't think he was ever nominated for an Academy Award. I don't think Harry Dean Stanton has ever been nominated.
And you would have thought, since we lost him recently when Lucky came out, it seemed like, if they were going to honor him in some capacity, that would have been another opportunity to do so. But, again, we talked about Peter Sarsgaard having a memorable scene and monologue of sorts Harrison Stanton late in this film, when he finally reunites with his estranged wife, mm-hmm. has a monologue that is it's unbelievably heartbreaking.
Yeah,
that you kind of go, this should get a lot of attention and a lot of awards, and it didn't.
No, it did. And that's again, we just mentioned Wings of Desire. That's a Wim Wenders movie, Paris, Texas, and one of my very favorites. It's an extraordinary movie. Harry Dean Stanton was one of the best actors ever. And, you know, when he was on, he was on. And, yeah, so he was just terrific in that movie. This was one, the next one that you have here, this is one that I thought for sure was going to be nominated. And I was really yeah. surprised when it wasn't. Amy Adams in Arrival. She's so great in that movie. And you know, she's an Academy favorite. So I thought for sure she was going to be nominated for that.
Yeah, that was a huge shock to me, because I thought that, you know, I mean, she's always consistently great, and like you said, they do nominate her quite a bit, especially in the supporting category, but to me, that was like a crowning achievement, and I adore that movie. It's really remarkable, and she's one of the main reasons why it's so remarkable.
Yeah, I agree. She's great in that movie, and that was a stunner when she was left off the ballot. I was really shocked. Next one is just a classic performance, Robert Shaw in Jaws. I mean, you just for the Indianapolis monologue alone, he should have been nominated, but he's great in Jaws, really great.
Yeah, it's a classic. You see that performance and you go, yeah, it's one of the all timers for
sure. It is, and that you know, I mean, it goes without saying that Indianapolis monologue is just one of the greatest monologues ever. And the fact that he was completely bombed when they filmed it and then passed out right at the end of the take, you know, is amazing. When you watch the movie, it's like, oh my God. And it's just, obviously the legend of that monologue, like who really wrote it? How much did Shaw write himself? Was it Milius who took most of the credit for it? And there's all of these stories are surrounding that monologue, and it's such a legendary, legendary monologue, and it's delivered so beautifully. I think Robert Shaw is just, you know, great in Jaws. Great. All right, how about Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler? A great performance.
Yeah, and that's what kind of made the, you know, the latest movie, Velvet Buzzsaw, more disappointing, because it was the same writer-director, and you had Jake Gyllenhaal again. And he definitely can go big. And, you know, especially in that film with his wide eyes, and, you know, a lot of people can kind of see it maybe as hammy, but I thought it was really a fascinating departure for him, because mm-hmm. he usually plays somebody kind of warm and, you know, caring, and this is like the complete opposite. He's really cold and ruthless throughout the entire movie, and he does it so effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great performance. I'm a big fan of Nightcrawler. I thought it was great, and I thought his performance was spot on. Now this is a classic. Humphrey Bogart, Treasure of Sierra Madre, a great, great performance from a great actor.
Yeah, and Treasure of Sierra Madre has gone on to become my favorite film. And, you know, obviously Walter Huston deserved the best supporting actor, you know, for so many reasons.
Yeah.
People weren't used to Bogart as a, you know, that, again, cold and ruthless villain of the piece. And I think people maybe were taken aback so much by it, but I mean, again, it's such a standout role, and so, I mean, when he starts talking to himself, man, it's creepy.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Elizabeth Olsen in Martha, Marcy May, Marlene is a performance that got ignored by the Academy, and that was when I went, oh, wait a minute, she's actually related to the Olsen twins? And because she's like really good, and of course she's gone on. Elizabeth Olsen has gone on to great acclaim, and deservedly so. But yeah, that Martha, Marcy May, Marlene is a terrific performance.
Yeah, and an underrated movie. I'm really excited for I know the director's next movie's coming out this year, and it stars Carrie Coon. So I'm like, I'm on board for that.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is, of course, without saying, for me, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Magnolia. You know, it is the, you know, the character that he plays in Magnolia is really, the heart of the movie. Like, he's the centerpiece. He's the heart of that film. And, it's a great, great performance. And obviously you know, the showier performance, and a great performance in and of itself, got the nomination that year, and that was Tom Cruise. He got nominated for Magnolia, deservedly so. He's great, but Philip Seymour Hoffman kind of took a, ended up taking kind of a backseat to that performance when it came to which performance are we going to pick from Magnolia, and they you know obviously went with Cruise.
Yeah, that's one of those movies too where it's like at this point I think the Academy should just have a best ensemble category.
Yeah,
just you know because everybody in that movie is just amazing. Everything about that movie is amazing, as you know.
Yeah, it's my favorite movie of all time. And then we have David Oyelowo for Selma. Selma was ignored pretty soundly by the Academy the year it came out, which is really really surprising to me.
Yeah, it definitely caused a stir among a lot of people, and especially once you see that performance, you're like, well, this again, you know, again, just making a historical statement, and but also bringing a lot of life into that character and making it so memorable. In so many ways that you kind of just go, well, obviously this should be nominated, but it wasn't for some strange reason.
Yeah. Michelle Williams in Take This Waltz, what a great performance. Obviously, she's gone on to, you know, much acclaim, and she's an awards darling, but man, she was terrific in Take This Waltz, which is a really sadly underseen movie.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I want Sarah Pauly to make more films because everyone she's made has amazing performances or has a really great sort of thematic statement about relationships. And just, I mean, Michelle Williams is like you said, kind of a national treasure. And I'm pretty sure she was nominated for Blue Valentine, if I'm not mistaken.
She was, yeah, she was.
But, yeah. Yeah, but she's amazing in that movie too.
Yeah, she's just great, man. She's great all the way around. Now, this is a heartbreaking one. River Phoenix and My Own Private Idaho, one of my favorite movies. And he is phenomenal. He and Keanu, everybody's great in it, but like he is heartbreaking in that movie. Like it is a devastating performance, and he was such a talented actor, River Phoenix.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mentioned that with Samantha Mathis because they start together in The Thing Called Love.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told her, like, that performance, you know, seeing that, like, when I was 12 or 13 kind of made me go, that is an actor right there doing everything right in every way.
Yeah, it is, again, My Own Private Idaho is just a fantastic movie. Okay, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Jim Liskowski's here. We're going to get to the new movies, but Jim made a list of his favorite performances not nominated for an Oscar, and we're talking about that. The Oscars are next week, so we figured we'd give that a run. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll get back to that and then review the new movies right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a Monday morning and it's a jokey time. And we're going to talk about racing movies in honor of the Daytona 500. And we got some driving tips in general that we're going to be talking about as well. So there you go. And as you guys know, Dan Shigaru has taken some time off, and he's going to join us at 4:30 to tell us about that time off that he's been taking. And we'll talk to Dan about that a little bit later on. Dan Shigaru. Ben is filling in as producer, and he's doing a great job. So let's get back to this. We were Jim Liskowski. Eric is not able to join us this morning. He had an ankle issue and did not leave the house and didn't see any movies, so he's taking the morning off. Jim Liskowski and I are going to cover the new movies, but first, Jim put together a list of favorite performances not nominated for an Oscar, and that's what we're doing right now, getting back to that. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again.
Okay. Andy Serkis in Lord of the Rings as Gollum. I don't know if they're ever going to honor the motion capture performances, which is too bad because, you know, like Andy Serkis is amazing. I mean, especially, you know, I mean, in all of the stuff that he does is great. But I really, really, really love him in the Planet of the Apes movies. I think that character of Caesar is just so so amazing and beautifully done.
Yeah, he's memorable in everything. You're right. He's kind of just the master of motion capture acting, and that takes a lot of skill, a lot of effort.
Yeah,
you know, and he, you know, he's in King Kong, and like you said, he is Caesar. So I mean, yeah, I think at some point they should at least, you know, cite him for the kind of work he's done. I just can't believe he never was nominated.
Yeah, this is another surprising one. Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive. It was your next choice. You know, she got acclaimed for that movie. That was the breakout movie for her. Like, that was the movie that was like, who is this? So.
Yeah, and who can forget the audition scene in that movie? That's kind of the moment where I'm like, okay, who is this?
Yeah.
And I want to see everything that she's in. I think her best performance still might be 21 Grams, but,
yeah.
I mean, Mulholland Drive is pretty special.
Yeah. Now, the next one is a crime against humanity, as far as I'm concerned. Paul Giamatti in Sideways. I was just beside myself when he didn't get nominated for that movie. It's one of my favorite performances of all time, one of my favorite movies of all time. And I was just, I remember being furious that he didn't get nominated. You know, like everybody else in the movie got nominated except for Giamatti. I mean, it was just insane.
I always wonder, too, if, like, maybe because he's so consistently great in everything, like, did it stand out for people the way it should have? Like, I mean, at the same time, though, it's not one of those, super showy performances. It's just such a humane, heartbreaking performance.
Oh, yeah.
That I couldn't get over how good he was in that, and he's always good.
He's great. Yeah, he's Paul Giamatti, man. He's one of the best actors on the planet. And I love that movie so much, and I love him in it, and it was a crime that he didn't get nominated. Ingrid Bergman for Casablanca, that's a shocker. You would just assume that she got nominated. You know what I mean? You would just like, this is a classic movie, a classic performance, and how in God's name did she not get a nomination?
Yeah, I mean, goodness, for the final moments alone and the close-up of that face, and you just kind of go, yeah, this is kind of obvious. It's almost, I don't think I include it on the list, but similarly with Anthony Perkins in Psycho, because it's such, ingrained in your mind at some point, you kind of go, well, clearly that was nominated, wasn't it? And then you do research, and you're like, oh my gosh, it wasn't.
It wasn't, yeah. The next one is a terrific performance in a movie that not a lot of people saw, Jason Patrick in Rush, a great, great performance.
Yeah, he's another underrated actor, in my opinion, and I don't think he's working as much as he used to, but I wish he would, because I remember it's another one I saw, kind of when I was younger-ish, like 14 or 15, and just kind of went, man, this is a powerful film. Again, another Jennifer Jason Leigh performance, too. That's great, too.
Yep. The next one is just, I think, it's my favorite Reese Witherspoon performance still, and that's Election. She's phenomenal. Yeah. And that is a great movie. Again, Alexander Payne, but I think Reese Witherspoon, and I love Reese Witherspoon. I think she's great, but man, I still think this is the best performance she's ever given.
Completely agree. Yeah, I mean, she came to my attention with The Man in the Moon, which is actually the first movie I ever went on a date with, and I was just like, this, she lights up the screen. She's amazing. She's got such great presence. But that role, you just never forget it when you see it.
Now, Election is amazing. And Matthew Broderick is great in that movie, too. It's such a great, funny movie. Christian Bale in American Psycho, a great performance. You would figure, wouldn't get nominated just because of the subject matter and the kind of movie that it is, but he's phenomenal in it. It is such a great performance.
I know people like go, oh, he gained all this weight for Vice or whatever, but I just think that is such a more complex, memorable role for him. I think it's really surprising that, I mean, it's the same way with like Jeff Bridges and Big Lebowski, how he sort of gets known for that. I think most people think of Christian Bale in that role because it stands out so strongly.
Yeah, and then of course you next one is Donald Sutherland, Ordinary People, which is we've talked about that time and time again about how ridiculous it was that he didn't get nominated.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned it many times with the fact that everybody else was nominated.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he was overlooked. And it's the best performance in the movie.
I agree.
For sure.
Kirk Douglas, Ace in the Hole, my favorite Kirk Douglas performance, my favorite Kirk Douglas movie. But again, another that one bombed when it came out. It was It bombed when it came out, and it was it's about as dark as you can get. It's amazing that that movie was even released that the year it came out, because it's just so dark.
Yeah, no, Billy Wilder definitely had dark streaks. I mean, even there are moments in The Apartment where I'm like, God, I can't believe they got away with that.
Yeah, you know,
like slapping Shirley MacLaine around or something.
That's Billy Wilder, yeah, no, that's, man. Billy Wilder had an edge in all of his movies. And Billy Wilder, you go back and look at that guy's filmography, he's made several masterpieces. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And Ace in the Hole is one of them. Jeremy Irons in Dead Ringers, two phenomenal performances. He ended up winning, a couple of years later for Reversal of Fortune. He won Best Actor. And I don't know if you remember, the first person he thanked was David Cronenberg. I don't know. He had nothing to do with Reversal of Fortune, but everything to do with Dead Ringers. And it's a remarkable pair of performances.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you watch that and you just kind of go, how do they do that? How do they manage to make this work in pulling off like the dual role? And he makes each individual brother, memorable in different ways.
No, and you can tell which brother he's playing.
Yeah,
definitely. And it's a great performance. And finally, you got Dennis Hopper for Blue Velvet. You know, they gave him a nomination that year for Hoosiers because I think the better performance is in Blue Velvet, but they gave it to him for Hoosiers because like you couldn't nominate the guy who played Frank Booth. I mean, it was his big comeback. That year was a big comeback for him, but he got the nomination. They went safe, and they gave him the nomination for Hoosiers instead of Blue Velvet, but he's great in Blue Velvet.
Yeah, I also wouldn't expect the Academy to recognize that. I know that was kind of even at the time, very divisive movie, but, I mean, to me, it's like there's Alan Rickman in Die Hard in terms of great villain performances of all time, and Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a terrific, terrific performance. Well, that's an interesting list. Now, are you looking forward to the Oscars, Jim?
Yeah, no, I always do. I mean, I'm so glad that they reversed the decision.
Yeah.
That now they're actually airing all.
Oh yeah.
The categories.
No, I mean that was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard, and I'm glad that there was such an outcry about how ridiculous. For those people who might not know, they were gonna not air Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Makeup, Hair Design, and Live Action Short. They were going to do those during a commercial, which is absurd. It's completely absurd. I mean, the whole idea of it is absurd, but especially cinematography and editing. It's like, what are you kidding me? These are essential things, especially cinematography. I mean, how can you not honor, the cinematographer? But they reversed that, so all of the categories will be live.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm not happy like most people are with some of the Best Picture nominees. But at the same time, I'm cheering on, Roma and Alfonso Cuarón left and right. And I want to see a lot of these, people get some recognition. I mean, it's going to be an interesting show in light of all the changes that have made and the fact that there's not going to be a host.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be, it'll be strange. I don't know how this is going to work or what's going to happen, but I'm interested to see like what the opening is going to be. Cause every year it's a monologue. Every year it's the host doing a monologue and taking apart the room. And it's going to be really, really weird to see what they replace that with. So, but I'll be looking forward to it, and I'm certainly rooting for certain people, and there you go. So, and I will say this: if Bohemian Rhapsody wins Best Picture, you will hear explosions in the old Irving Park neighborhood. That will be me, my head blowing up. So that's so. Anyway, all right, Jim.
Yeah, it's a good piece of garbage. Yeah.
Okay, Jim, hang on. All right.
Okay.
Jim Laskowski is with us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll jump into the new movies. We got three new movies to talk about, and then box office as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we'll do the movie reviews coming up after this.
Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, where we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about the best racing movies and driving in general. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And there you go. It is Monday. That means we're reviewing the new movies. Eric Childress is out this week. He had an ankle injury and wasn't able to get out and see any movies, so he's taking the morning off. But Jim Laskowski is here, and we've got the new movies to review, and we'll do that right now. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, tell us about Happy Death Day to You.
All right. Well, this is a sequel, of course, to the 2017 horror comedy Happy Death Day, which was essentially a slasher spin, if you will, on the Groundhog Day time loop premise, where our lead character is essentially repeating the same day over and over and over again. The basic, writer, director, and star return once again here. But within the first 10 minutes of this, it's established that this time, the main protagonist named Tree, played by Jessica Roth, her adventures in the first film were essentially the byproduct of a group of nerdy physics students that were testing out a sort of DIY homemade particle accelerator, which ended up creating the time loop. And we sort of learn all of this early on. And it sort of creates a chain reaction, and they attempt to correct the issue with this accelerator, only instead, of course, it throws Tree back into the same birthday loop. But this time around, as she's sort of walking through the day, she begins to notice some minor differences, including the fact that the killer from the first film isn't the same. Because every time she dies, she has to wake up in the same time loop over and over again. But this time, she's essentially trapped in an alternate reality. And at one point, instead of name-dropping Groundhog Day about 20 minutes in, the main characters that Tree sort of surrounds herself with name-check Back to the Future Part 2. And in this reality, her mother is alive, but her new main squeeze, Carter, is instead dating her sworn enemy, the leader of the sorority. So ultimately, she wants to correct things, but she also wants to enjoy the experience of having her mother back in her life. While this is happening, she, of course, has to get to the bottom of the baby mask-wearing murderer in this reality. What it all comes down to is that Tree must choose between remaining in this kind of unfamiliar world where she might actually be happier, or returning to her real life if the physics students and her can sort of figure things out and she can get back to her actual reality. So like I said, the original Happy Death Day was just a horror version of Groundhog Day, and it was a box office hit. It was delightful. I really enjoyed it. And, it's kind of like in the vein of Scream, where there's a little self-awareness going on. But I remember also last week, Eric mentioned not being the biggest fan of the first film, but wishing that Jessica Roth's, wonderful performance was in a better movie. I enjoyed the original, like I said.
Yeah.
And I was excited to see what they were going to do with the sequel, especially since I thought, the trailer showed promise. And I give them credit for not completely repeating the original premise, but, like I said, kind of going with an alternate reality version of the first film. But I don't know. It didn't quite work for me in the same way the first film did. I think it gets really convoluted. It's just not quite as funny as the first film was. About halfway, I started to realize this isn't a horror mystery in any way. It's pretty much a sci-fi comedy, and there's just a lot of exposition, a lot of sort of explaining why things are the way they are. Whereas in the first one, you sort of just go with it, and she's sort of going with what's happening. And I like that we don't get an explanation as to why everything is happening. But now in this film, it seems like that's all they want to do is kind of explain how all this happened in the first place. It's not entirely horrible or even an unnecessary sequel because once again, Jessica Roth is a true movie star. I mean, she lights up the screen. She has great comedic timing that kind of reminds me of Anna Faris when she first broke onto the scene. I just think Jessica Roth is kind of the main reason that this movie works at all. But I do think the writers kind of wrote themselves in a corner and sort of just made a more confusing version of the first movie and kind of a less funny one, at least for me. And also here the murder mystery is kind of just left on the back burner, and when it's finally resolved, you actually don't care. And that's, you know, kind of disappointing because, you know, you care about how things play out in the first film. So, I mean, there's just enough wit here and there, but you also want it to work better. You just want this to be more interesting than it actually is. And if you're a fan of the first one, I think you will perk up again at Jessica Roth because she's great. But I was pretty disappointed with this one. I just think it's a lot less fun. And I do like this, you know, the multiverse theory being thrown in here, but it got more confusing for me, and I didn't get as involved as I did with the first one. So this was a letdown. I can't completely recommend it, unfortunately.
All right. I enjoyed the first one, too. I liked it, and I think she's great. I think Jessica Roth is great. I didn't have time to see it over the weekend. But I'm sorry to hear that it's a disappointment. But she's really terrific. She was great in the first one.
Yeah.
So all right. Okay, Jim, tell us about Alita: Battle Angel.
Ah, yes. So this is Robert Rodriguez's first film in about 5 years, I think. And it's an adaptation of a manga series. It's of the same name, essentially, but I think it's also called Gun. And it's, you know, obviously a futuristic sort of post-apocalyptic tale here. In the year 2563, a catastrophic war known as the Fall has left the Earth devastated. And, you know, the city of itself, it sort of has this, like, bombed-out hellscape. And it's essentially called Iron City, which looks like a cross between, you know, the worlds of like Blade Runner and WALL-E. Most members of the population have replaced at least like one of their limbs with a bionic appendage, and kind of not always out of necessity. They just want to become more evolved if possible. And there's this, you know, their primary source of entertainment is this kind of futuristic roller derby called Motorball. Very similar to Rollerball to some degree, but high above Iron City is this kind of floating community of Zalem. And here it's sort of that community houses the wealthy and provides just kind of like a constant reminder of how lousy life is on the ground for, you know, the lower class. So the trash dumps here are also, you know, a place where people can find hidden treasures. And this cyberkinetic surgeon named Dr. Dyson Ido, played by Christoph Waltz here, finds enough spare parts to sort of assemble this wide-eyed female cyborg named Alita. And she looks and acts like a teenage girl, but seems to have this kind of interesting instincts built into her. You know, essentially she has these assassin-like skills embedded deep in her memory, though she can't remember a lot of her own personal details of the life she had. And so throughout, we're following Alita's journey to realize her true identity. And, of course, it involves a conflict with the Fifth Up in Zalem and a villain named Nova, who can project his consciousness through various outlying areas down on the surface, causing havoc. And so we have all these characters and action into play. We follow Alita also as she befriends this dreamboat named Hugo, and she also has to save the community from killer cyborgs and wants to ultimately become this hunter warrior leader for the lower class. And so we're following her as she uncovers her past, and of course she wants to become a fully realized human being despite not being that at all. And Nova wants to put an end to her heroics through various means, and so we have to essentially see if good will triumph over evil in the traditions of good old-fashioned fables. Okay. Only this time it's mixed with anime.
Okay, Jim, hang on.
Okay, will do.
All right, Jim Liskowski just told you all about Alita: Battle Angel, and when we come back, we'll give our full reviews of the latest from Robert Rodriguez, and that's coming up right after this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Yesterday was the Daytona 500, so we're going to, in honor of that, we're going to talk about racing movies. What are our favorite ones? There are a lot to choose from, and we'll get into that. And we want to open up the phone lines and have you guys jump in. Talk or text 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Before the break, Jim Liskowski, Eric is off this week, had some ankle issues and wasn't able to get out and see any movies, so he's taking the morning off. But Jim Liskowski is here, and before the break, he gave us the plot and rundown of Alita: Battle Angel. And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again.
All right. Well, tell us what you thought of Alita: Battle Angel.
Yeah, so as I was going through those plot details, even I found myself a little lost. and that's just because the script here isn't very strong. I mean, we both, you know, I think we kind of know a little bit about the history of this film and that James Cameron wanted to put it together himself and he wanted to direct it. But he basically just got caught up in the Avatar sequels and the franchise that he's sort of slowly but surely going to get back to. But he's been working on that for a while. So he sort of passed it on to Robert Rodriguez, who does have a penchant for, you know, mixing green screen technology with fast-paced action, as he's done in the past. And what we have with this film is just like, you know, kind of a typical young warrior arc mixed with a cyberpunk Pinocchio, if you will. And it's very earnest, it's very simple, and I think that they want to appeal to a wider audience, but I think mileage is going to vary for those who are, you know, into anime or into the graphic novel, or who are fans of either James Cameron kind of in Avatar mode, or Rodriguez doing what he does. And when it comes to Robert Rodriguez, I haven't been a huge fan of his. I think he's only been successful with Spy Kids and most of Sin City, which managed to, you know, both of those films managed to be stylish and fun with memorable characters and a story that you can get behind. And here, not so much. I'm not huge into anime, and even the simplistic script is pretty by the numbers for the most part. I mean, there's definitely some impressive effects and some cool action sequences, and I do like the screen presence of Alita, you know, courtesy of Rosa Salazar, with eyes that kind of look like these giant fried eggs. But, you know, they aren't quite as creepy as I expected, especially once you get used to it. You sort of adapt. Mahershala Ali has a small part, but he's kind of like functioning as a mouthpiece here and there. Jennifer Connelly is here too, but her character is really poorly defined and kind of unnecessary. The main problem is really just the cast of characters here have some really subpar dialogue, I think. And that is, you know, like, screenplays have never been the strength of James Cameron or Robert Rodriguez, especially recently. So this became, again, kind of a bit of a mess for me that's not really emotionally involving. But, I mean, I'm sure fans of the graphic novel and anime might be a little kinder to this in general, since it does retain some of the characteristics and aesthetics, you know, at least from what I've heard. But the clunky dialogue just it really irked me and made my eyes roll throughout the film. So really, outside of the visuals, there's nothing here that's really unique or interesting for me. I mean, it's definitely better than Avatar or something like Ghost in the Shell, because it's earnest, it's straightforward, there's a hero to root for. But again, I'm not the biggest fan of anime or Robert Rodriguez, so it's just not for me, possibly. But it could find a cult audience for the future. But again, it wasn't for me, and I can't recommend it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't like it either. I think visually there's some really cool stuff. I did see it in the 3D. I will say that the 3D effects are pretty great. And, when you spend the kind of money on these effects, and when you're James Cameron and you have access to, some of the best special effects artists in the world, you better make a movie that's visually captivating. You know what I mean? And I will say this, visually, it's pretty spectacular, and some of the effects are really great. But I just didn't connect with anything in this movie. I didn't care about the characters. The relationship between Christoph Waltz and Rosa Salazar is supposed to be the main, sort of emotional component in the movie. But that seems forced. And I just I didn't feel anything while I was watching it. I just kind of sat there kind of numb as it just went on and on and on. And I found it also, as simplistic as what the screenplay is saying, I also found it really confusing. Like, I just didn't, half the time I was like, I don't even know what the hell's going on now. So I couldn't connect with it emotionally at all. A couple of action sequences here or there that are pretty sharp. I'm not a big Robert Rodriguez fan either. I'm with you. I guess it's just Spy Kids in the first Sin City are the ones that I like the most that he's done. Never been a huge Rodriguez fan. I'm not a big James Cameron fan either. And like you, I don't watch anime all of the aesthetics that are put into this movie are things that I'm not necessarily interested in. So, going in, this was a movie that was going to have to win me over, because I walked in with, all those chips on my shoulder, and unfortunately, it didn't do it for me. You can see where every dollar went. I will say that, it did make, when it opened up before, Valentine's Day, it did make a total of over $36 million. Which I think is a little bit more than they thought it would, especially considering how underperforming the Lego Movie is doing, which is really, really disappointing. Really disappointing that not a lot of people are going to see the Lego Movie. But it did end up being number one at the box office, so it did have a big enough crowd. But I cannot recommend Alita Battle Angel. Cannot do it. Okay. All right. Jim, tell us about Isn't It Romantic?
Yeah, it's this is a film that kind of comes from a director named Todd Strauss-Schulzen, who previously wrote and directed a film from 2015 called The Final Girls, which it's interesting in that regard. I'll get to the plot of that in a minute here. But in this film, we have Natalie, played by Rebel Wilson, who is an architect living in New York City. And while she kind of grew up, when she was younger, loving romantic comedies, she has come to realize that life never really works out the way it does in the movie, surprise. She lives in a tiny, cramped apartment. She's overlooked by her coworkers, with the exception of her assistant, Whitney, and her best friend, Josh, played by Adam Devine. And her friends are ridiculous fans of the romantic comedy genre. They sort of get together and, have movie nights and stuff. But Natalie is not as into it. She's grown pretty cynical about relationships and romance in general. Then one night, a mugging kind of goes haywire, resulting in Natalie getting hit on the head and then waking to, find herself inside a reimagined world that runs on the rules and the whims of a romantic comedy, as you've seen from the trailer. So, of course, Natalie realizes her predicament. She's aware of her situation, and at times she's either grumpy about it or she embraces it. Her neighbor has become her overly effeminate gay best friend. She and Whitney have suddenly transformed into work rivals because I guess women can't be friends in romantic comedies. And her client, Blake, played by Liam Hemsworth, is instantly attracted to her and, of course, has perfect abs. Natalie, figures out that, that she sort of has to accept this universe that she's in and to use the rules of the genre in order to kind of get to the end of the story, to the end of the movie. So, essentially, will she find out that true love, can save the day? And can she, open up her heart and be less cynical about romance? Will she become a part of this alternate universe forever? Well, a lot of comedy ensue, as you would expect, especially when you have a comedic actress like Rebel Wilson on board. So what we get here is a meta-commentary on the romantic comedy.
Okay, hang on, Jim. Jim, hang on. We got a break. Mm-hmm. All right, hang on a second. When we come back, we will get Jim's thoughts on Isn't It Romantic? And you'll get my thoughts on Isn't It Romantic? The latest romantic comedy, kind of meta-romantic comedy featuring Rebel Wilson. And I'll tell you what we thought of it and talk a little bit about box office as well. That's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we'll break here and come back. And Isn't It Romantic? We will review that right after this on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk about racing movies in honor of Daytona 500 yesterday and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. As you know, if you've been listening regularly, Dan Shugru, has been taking some time off, and we're going to hear from Dan this morning. He's going to come in the studio and talk about that time off that he's been taking, and we'll talk to him at around 4:30. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. And before the break, Jim Laskowski told us about the new romantic comedy satire with Rebel Wilson, Isn't It Romantic? And now we'll find out what we thought of it. Jim, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I haven't thought of this, but it's interesting that all three movies this week kind of share, to some degree, a level of self-awareness within the characters. You know, that they all sort of realize that they kind of inhabit an alternate world. And, even to some degree, Alita sort of comes to terms with, oh, I've been reassembled to become the hero of this world. And Jessica Roth's character in Happy Death Day to You also obviously becomes aware of her situation. And in this, we have Rebel Wilson realizing, oh, man, I'm stuck in this, romantic comedy environment. So how am I going to best, serve this world and also, find happiness within myself? But it really kind of gets, at some rather, predictably sweet insights about love in the same way that a romantic comedy would. I mean, someone says at one point in the film, there's no being more worthy of love than yourself. And that's kind of how deep this movie really gets. Jokes focus on things like the gay best friend never seems to have an actual job, so he's able to pop up into the story literally anywhere and everywhere to offer wisdom to Natalie, which, I kind of liked. And there's another character named Donnie who becomes this, sort of sassy best friend that I also enjoyed. But I just thought it was kind of a mixed bag. I mean, Rebel Wilson's talent is kind of squandered because she has to basically play a low-key, grumpy, sad sack. And, there are definite times where she perks up, especially with Liam Hemsworth. But it's just not, the tones don't mesh really well here because it's making fun of the romantic comedy, but it's also embracing the tropes of a romantic comedy. It's interesting to me that this movie is kind of a riff on an old John Candy movie from the 90s called Delirious, which I don't think a lot of people think about, but
yeah.
It's in that movie, John Candy gets a bump on the head and winds up stuck in the world of soap operas. And in this, it's very similar, but I also think this movie's kind of arriving like 10 years too late. Maybe if it had been written or it came out around the time of something like My Best Friend's Wedding, it might have felt more fresh and more clever. There is one moment, the one bright spot for me was the karaoke scene with I Want to Dance with Somebody, just because the camera movement, lighting, the staging of it, it felt like a different movie, but it was kind of welcome in that moment. I thought that was really energetic and kind of nice. I felt like it needed that spark more often. Because, like I said, the script sort of splits itself between being a farce, but also being genuine. So, it's like a mixed bag. It's very similarly to how I felt about the director's last film, The Final Girls, where characters realize they're stuck inside a slasher movie. And I had fun with that one. I thought it was, relatively good. But then again, it started to take itself too seriously when I thought it could get a little bit wackier and crazier. I don't think it's a complete waste of time, because I did laugh at a few things here and there, like I said, but it never really finds its balance, I think, between being cute and clever. It was pretty uneven, only a few funny moments, not consistently, smart in terms of its script, and it concludes in a very cheesy way. So, again, I can't wholeheartedly recommend this one either.
I got to say, I'm recommending this, and I know that's it's completely shocking to me that I'm recommending this movie. And you're absolutely, I'll tell you this, you're absolutely right. It is a movie that starts out wanting to, mock the romantic comedy, but it becomes a romantic comedy. I mean, inevitably, it's everything that it makes fun of, it does eventually. So I have an issue with that. But there are things in this movie that made me laugh, pretty consistently. And the thing about this movie is that I think that the cast here is just great. The subplot involving Adam Devine and Priyanka Chopra, because she's this unattainably hot model who inexplicably is falling for Adam Devine. I thought that subplot was really funny, and I enjoyed that.
Sure.
I thought Liam Hemsworth was really funny in it too, and I like the fact that he and Chopra are these, they know each other because of, the cliche that they are. But ultimately, the reason why I like this movie is because of Rebel Wilson. I think Rebel Wilson is terrific in it. I really do. And I liked her character. And by the end, I cared. Like, what happens at the end of this movie, like her self-discovery, it's obvious. You knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But it worked for me, and I really rooted for Adam Devine and for his character in this, and it helps that they've made like four movies together now. You know what I mean? That they do have that pitch perfect chemistry, and they're both very funny and very likable actors. This is not the greatest script in the world. Again, it kind of messes up what it really wanted to do, which was to be a satire of romantic comedies, and then it becomes a romantic comedy. But it's carried, I think, essentially by this cast. I really think the performances are good, particularly Rebel Wilson. I think Rebel Wilson is actually really terrific in the movie, and I think it's a great showcase for her. So I'm recommending. It's a flawed movie. It's not great by any stretch of the imagination. If you skip it, you skip it. But I enjoyed it enough to recommend it, and I like the musical numbers in it.
That was the highlight for me.
The very end of the movie, it's a Madonna song, so that right there makes me happy. And it was just a great spirit about the movie. There was a real sort of like, and it's a nice movie too. You know what I mean? It's one of these movies where you thought, oh, that was nice. And you need that every once in a while. You know what I mean? You know, it's like this day and age.
Yeah,
yes, I really would like to see kind of a sunny, nice movie. And I know that sounds wimpy and whatever, but I don't know. Maybe I was in the right mood for it. And I liked it. I thought it did what it was meant to do. And it was a showcase for a really, really funny actress. So, yeah, I'm recommending it.
It's definitely the best. It's definitely the best of the three that came out this weekend. I would be curious. Have you seen The Final Girls? Because I think you would really like
No,
that
I did.
Too.
I liked it very much. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's
yeah,
good.
No, I just thought that too really snuck up on me. As it went along, and again, has a really great ensemble of great actors that sort of really, even if the script isn't the strongest, they carry the movie really well.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think that's a better movie than this one, but still. I'm recommending Isn't It Romantic? So there we go. Box office, sure. Real quick, we'll do this, Jim. Alita, Battle Angel, 27 $0.8 million over the weekend with its released before Valentine's Day, $36 million total. And I don't know, I think it's going to need to make a lot more in order to make a profit, because it was a pretty expensive movie. Number two, the Lego Movie 2, the second part, $21 million. The total is only $62 million, and that is way underperforming. And that's,
That's sad.
It is, and it's a terrific movie, just a great movie, and if you've not seen it, you should. Number three, Isn't It Romantic? $14 million, $20 million since Valentine's Day. That's pretty solid numbers. You know, I mean, this is like the first movie that Rebel Wilson has had to carry, you know, because she's been supporting, you know, she's been supporting in every in all the other movies. This is like her first starring role, and that's pretty good numbers for that. Number four.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm glad for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And number four is What Men Want. That is up to, let's see, that made $10.9 million. It's up to $36 million for 2 weeks. Those are okay numbers. Number five, Happy Death Day to You. Only made $9 million. It came out on Valentine's Day, so it made $13 million. And that's underperforming considering how successful the first one was. And I'm surprised by that, actually. I thought there, you know, I thought, because there was a built-in audience for this movie.
Yeah, I'm very surprised, too. And I know the director wants to make a trilogy, wants to turn into a trilogy, or at least he's had that in mind for a while. But we'll see after, you know, the numbers came out for this one.
Yeah, pretty disappointing. Number six, Cold Pursuit, $21 million total. That's the latest Liam Neeson film, doing disappointing numbers again. Number seven, The Upside, $5.5 million, bringing its total up to about $95 million. That this could make $100 million, and nobody really expected this Kevin Hart, Bryan Cranston movie to do as well as it did, but it turned into like a winter hit. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right, and then number eight is Glass, number nine, The Prodigy, and number 10, Green Book, which is doing solid numbers and will continue to do so through the Oscars, which is next week. All right, Jim, thank you, man. Next week, I will not be on. I will not be on next week because I'm taking off for the Oscars, but Fighting With My Family and How to Train Your Dragon 3 are the big releases.
Yeah, can't wait to see How to Train Your Dragon. That's just a consistently great series of
films. I agree. I love both of those movies. Love both of those movies. Okay, man, I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Jim, thanks, buddy.
Okay, sounds good, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, Jim Liskowski, everybody. I'm going to be off next week, so we'll return in a couple of weeks for more new movie reviews. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we are going to be talking about the best racing movies. So if you want to jump in on that topic, we'll do that in a couple of minutes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I want to take this opportunity to invite you guys to come to my next film club screening. I do this the first Tuesday of each month, and it's a lot of fun. We've now teamed up with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street from the AMC Rosemont 18 Theater, where we have our screenings all the time. And they've been really great with us. Since December, we've been working with those guys since we screened Scrooged with Bill Murray, and we had such a great time, you know, that the management was like, hey, even if Bill Murray is not in any of the movies, let's just do the pre-show party here. So that's what we've been doing, and it's great. They give the Nick DiGilio Film Club members 15% off on all their food, which is a really great deal. And all you got to do is just have, you know, your ticket stub or proof that you're going to see the movie, and you get 15% off all your food. They've got great food there too at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. They have this specialty that they do. Have you been there, Ben?
It's been a while, but yeah.
They have a specialty that they do at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. It's an appetizer, and it is mashed potatoes, cheese, bacon, deep fried in a ball. And it's shaped like a golf ball, and you get a really delicious horseradish sauce.
I mean, you said the two magic ingredients, bacon and fried.
Yeah, and cheese and mashed potatoes.
Yeah,
And yeah. It's they're really, really addictive, and they're fantastic. And they're called golf balls, obviously, because it's Candy Shack.
Yeah.
But they're really, really good. That's one of the house specialties. Those are great. If you get an appetizer, get that appetizer because it's really good. But anyway, 15% off. What happens is, you know, around 6 o'clock, everybody shows up at the Caddyshack restaurant. We have some dinner, hang out, and then we just go over to the movie theater. And the movie that we're showing on Tuesday, March 5th, is a classic, a true cinema classic, one of the best American movies ever made. We're showing Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart. Truly one of the I'm prone to hyperbole, but this is truly one of the best American movies ever made. And Jimmy Stewart, one of my favorite Jimmy Stewart performances. This is an iconic movie and an iconic role, and I've never seen it on the big screen. And I am really, really excited to see it on the big screen. And you don't get a chance to see this one very often. We're really happy to be showing this one. So tickets are only $10 to get into the movie. Parking is free. And again, show up a little bit early, go down the street to the Caddyshack restaurant, get 15% off your food, and then come and see Jimmy Stewart on the big screen in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which is just such a great film. And it's Frank Capra. And I think it's one of Frank Capra, maybe Frank Capra's best movie. And it's one of those movies that it just makes you feel good. It's the kind of beautiful American idealistic movie. That actually, in this day and age, I think we need now more than ever are these kinds of movies. And this is just going to be so much fun to see on the big screen. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, there's a big lacking of feel-good movies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this one especially because it's a political movie. And, you know, politics now are just such a crazy, it's just so crazy now, like in the real world.
Yeah.
That I think this 2 hours that we're going to spend on March 5th is going to be a really nice break from that, and watching, you know, Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart, I mean, it's a very special movie, and I'm very, very, very excited to see it. It starts at 8 o'clock. The movie starts at 8 o'clock. I will introduce it, and then afterwards we'll have a little talk. I'll tell you about some trivia behind the scenes and all that cool stuff about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. If you've never seen this movie, you should come on out. This is a really great chance to see it on the big screen. And if you've never seen it on the big screen, you should come out. I know a lot of people have already seen this movie, but I've never experienced it on the big screen. And I'm real excited about it. So that's on Tuesday, March 5th, $10 to get into the movie only. And again, parking is free. You can reserve your seats right now at amctheaters.com. That's amctheaters.com. Go to the seating chart, pick the seats that you want, and they will be waiting for you on Tuesday, March 5th. So amctheaters.com to reserve your tickets right now. And then please show up early and have some food over at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is just such a great place. A really great atmosphere, really cool food, really good food. And they got a great bar right in the middle of the room. Lots of TVs for sporting events and stuff like that. And tons of Murray Brothers memorabilia, posters and things from the other movies and some really cool stuff. And there's great quotes written on the wall from Caddyshack. Like there's these fantastic quotes that are written just on the wall from Caddyshack. So it's a lot of fun. We've been having a good time teaming up with these guys. So that's March 5th. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So I hope you guys can make it out. And then in April, we're doing another Jimmy Stewart movie, but this one directed by the great Alfred Hitchcock. And we're showing The Man Who Knew Too Much. Which is a great movie. And so that's back-to-back Jimmy Stewart movies. So that will be in April. And then in May, we're going to do an Alfred Hitchcock. So we're doing a Jimmy Stewart double feature, an Alfred Hitchcock double feature crossing over. So so in May, we're showing one of my favorite Alfred Hitchcock movies, one of the most entertaining movies he ever made, and that is North by Northwest with Cary Grant, which is such a great movie and so entertaining and one of the quintessential Alfred Hitchcock movies. So you got Jimmy Stewart, a double feature, and then an Alfred Hitchcock double feature right on top of each other. And then and all of this stuff will be coincided with the food and dinner beforehand at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. But the big thing about Murray Brothers Caddyshack is going to be June. Because in June, I will be screening, and I can't believe this already, but I will be screening in honor of its 35th anniversary. See how this makes you feel? In honor of the 35th anniversary, see how old this makes you feel, of Ghostbusters. Yeah. 35 years old.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't that make you, it makes me feel like I'm 106 years old.
It's almost in the same category as you were. How old when Yellow Submarine came out?
Yeah. It is. I'm telling you. So we're doing a 35th anniversary celebration. Obviously, you know, Bill Murray's in Caddyshack, so we're going to have a really great time over at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant before Ghostbusters, and then we'll be screening the 35th anniversary. And I think. We may actually have some of the cosplay Ghostbusters show up in the Ecto-mobile.
I know that group.
Yeah. One of them used to work here. One of the members of the Ghostbusters cosplay group, the most popular of the Ghostbusters, used to do news here.
Huh.
Yeah, and so she is now.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Would I know them?
If I say her name, you might.
But they were here when I was here when they were here.
I don't know.
Ah,
I don't know. It, okay. This was, she worked on weekends, and she did my Saturday evening show when I had my Saturday evening show. She did the news during the Saturday evening show. Elizabeth Brown. Do you know Liz Brown?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's spelled Braun, but that's her maiden name.
Oh.
She's married now. That's her maiden name. She was single when she was here, but she's a major Ghostbusters cosplay.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try and get a hold of her and have her bring her group out there to celebrate the 35th anniversary, because that would be really, really cool to have people in costume there, because it's a big deal. 35 years is a big deal.
That's huge. Yeah.
And I vividly remember seeing that movie when it first came out, and I can't believe it's 35 years old. That was the same year that 1984. That was the same year as Purple Rain. So Purple Rain is 35 years old, too, because I remember they were both out that summer. Ridiculous. So anyway, come on out. Our first one coming up here in the spring is March 5th, and it is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Tickets are on sale right now. Reserve your seats right now. $10. Parking is free. AMCtheaters.com. So I hope you guys can all make it. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to jump into the best racing movies, and we want to hear from you. Call or text 312-981-7200. News is up next. Gotta make enough noise to wake the dead. It's going on in my head. Back from the land that time forgot. Right. There's a party in the city. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. We are here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Ben Anderson is here, filling in for Dan Chagrou, who's taking some time off, and we're actually going to talk to Dan. Dan's going to come down and tell us what's been going on. At around 4:30, he'll be in to talk. And so there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're about to jump into the topic of racing movies, because yesterday was the Daytona 500. And I did not see it. Did you see it?
I did not. No. I was sleeping a little bit and here for the rest of it.
Yes. Gotcha. I gotcha.
But I do know Denny Hamlin won.
Yes, that's what I that's what I heard. Yeah. So, but it's exciting. A lot of people love the Daytona 500. And so we thought we'd talk about racing movies, the best racing movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and for talk and text. So we'll jump into that.
Yeah, I have a spots or soft spot for the race. Because I live down there, and you and I talked a little bit about that.
Yeah.
But literally, when I went to school, you could look out my dorm room straight at the racetrack.
That's pretty cool.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, what's the first racing movie that popped into your head when we were thinking about this?
Oh, there are so many. But I'm going to go with the song that I played to get into this segment. Is from one of my favorite racing scenes.
Okay.
And it's from the movie Driven with Stallone.
Right.
And it's where they're racing the IndyCars through the city.
Oh, right. Right.
That's the song they used for that scene.
Yeah. I liked Driven. I remember kind of liking it. I know Rennie Harlan directed that movie, and Rennie Harlan's one of my favorite action directors. He directed He directed Die Hard 2. He directed Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis, which is one of my favorite underrated movies. But yeah, he directed that. And I remember Burt Reynolds was in Driven.
Yeah.
And I just haven't seen it. I haven't seen it since it came out. But yeah, that's on these lists right there. I got a couple of lists in front of me of the best racing movies. 312-981-7200. Now, you can't talk about like racing movies and not mention Death Race 2000, which is David Carradine, one of the legendary Roger Corman productions. Speaking of Stallone, he's in that. I think that was his first movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of the drivers in Death Race 2000. The idea of Death Race 2000 was... you would drive cars and hit people and kill them, and you would get more points if depending on the person that you killed. So this is an exploitation movie, a B movie from the 70s that played the drive-ins, and produced by Roger Corman from New World Pictures. And if the name Roger Corman is usually on the credits, those are the kind of movies that you get. You get genre movies, sci-fi movies, horror movies, action movies, that kind of stuff. But you can't talk about racing movies and not mention Death Race 2000. It's a classic movie, and the vehicles in it are also pretty awesome. Now they did remake it with Jason Statham, which they shouldn't have. But it was they just called it Death Race, and there was no need for a remake. I really enjoyed Death Race 2000. If you've not seen it, it is a classic B movie from the 70s, and it is pretty much everything you would expect from a crazy Roger Corman movie, and the cars are cool, and 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, we're talking in honor of the Daytona 500, which was yesterday. We're talking about the best racing movies. There are so many to choose from. Which ones are your favorites? Let's see. Here is Jack on WGN. Hi, Jack.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. You got a favorite?
Well, I'm a movie lover, so first one that popped into mind is Grand Prix.
Yeah, classic.
I mean, that's the car racing movie.
Yeah, it is. James Garner is in that one.
Eva St. Marie.
Yeah, Eva Marie St.
Eva Marie St. And
Toshiro Mifune is in it. It's a great movie. It's a John Frankenheimer directed that movie.
That's right.
Who directed a lot of really really good films. But yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know if it won for cinematography or not. There's a lot of great camera work and the credits. The way they do the cinematography on the credits.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I haven't seen that one in a long time. I need to dust that one off and watch it again. It's been a really long time since I've seen Grand Prix.
Yeah, that's, I actually have the album soundtrack of that.
Yeah.
Another one is certainly the Steve McQueen takeoff of that, which is Le Mans.
Le Mans, yeah. Steve McQueen obviously was a major race car driver. That was a real thing for him, not just because he was in Bullet,
right,
but because he was an actual professional race car driver, and that was his passion project, Le Mans.
Actually, motorcycles was more his racing passion.
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you got one of the most iconic moments in movie history on a motorcycle in The Great Escape. I mean, that's
So, and he did all the his own stunt work in there.
Absolutely. Okay.
Paul Newman in Winning is the other car movie. Not as good, but it's up there.
And that's another guy. Paul Newman was into racing too.
I think he finished second at. At the 24-hour race.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
He was a pro. No question about it. All right, Jack.
I did want to throw one other movie that nobody else is going to bring up. It's called I Sailed to Tahiti with an All-Girl Crew. It's look it up if you never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
It's a bad movie that's so bad it's good.
Oh, okay.
And it's about a boat race to Tahiti, and they're betting the boat. Whoever wins gets the other guy's boat. So
all right.
That's a good one.
I sailed to Tahiti with an all-girl crew.
Exactly.
Certainly a
1960s,
right,
I believe.
Certainly a good title. All right, Jack, thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, have a good one. 312-981-7200. I sailed to Tahiti with an all... Can you look that one up, Ben? I sailed to Tahiti with an all-girl crew. Jack saying that was so... It's so bad, it's good. You got to love movies that are so bad, they're good. I've never heard of that one, though. Quite a title. Who's in it? Does it what do they say about it there, Ben?
All right. It was released in 68.
Okay.
Let's see here.
Does it have an IMDb page?
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay.
I'm just trying to make sure I get to all the good stuff here. It was directed by Richard L. Bear.
Okay, that doesn't help me at all.
Yep.
Who's in it? Anybody of note?
Not that I really see, but some of the top ones are Gardner McKay,
uh-huh.
Fred Clark, Diane McBain, and Pat Buttram.
Pat Buttram?
Yeah, Buttram. Yeah.
Buttram?
Yeah,
oh, okay. I know him. Great, great character actor who was in like 900 Westerns and stuff. Got a very distinctive voice. He was in, Green Acres, I believe.
That's right.
And you get you can recognize that guy's voice, you know, from anyway. So anyway, there it is. Wonder if is it available? Have they put it out in the Criterion Collection Blu-ray yet for that one?
Not that I'm seeing.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200. Your favorite racing movies. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I want to talk about Days of Thunder, Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman. I have a real problem with that movie. I cannot buy Nicole Kidman as the preeminent brain surgeon in whatever city that thing takes place in.
Yeah.
I buy her as an intern. Okay, she's a doctor, but she's like supposed to be the best brain surgeon who's going to make sure that Tom Cruise's head doesn't get screwed up.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff in that movie that that challenges logic, I have to say. So, yeah. All right, John, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
You remember, you seen Days of Thunder?
Yes.
You remember his name in that movie?
Which one? Cruise's character? Oh, man.
Ernie.
Engineer Ernie.
Ernie for the
Cole
win.
Trickle.
Cole Trickle, that's
Cole
right.
Cole Trickle, that's
Cole
right.
Cole Trickle is his name. And I think that's loosely based on a real driver. Like, there's a guy...
Yeah. Dick Trickle.
Dick Trickle, right. Yeah. Cole Trickle is his name. Yeah, that's right. Good job.
Yeah.
Good job. Ernie just came barreling down the hallway. Which I mentioned of Days of Thunder. Wow.
Here, you want to know something interesting?
Mm.
Next year is 30th anniversary of Days of Thunder.
It is, yeah. 1990 it came out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. That, I remember, you know, it was the... same director, same team.
Zay Bruckheimer.
As Top Gun, it was Top Gun in a race car.
Yep,
it was essentially the same. It's essentially the same.
Fantastic!
Movie.
Oh, good cast, good everything.
How about this? Let's see. 847 area code. We're talking about racing movies, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Nick, not that it's the greatest car flick, but it's car night on your show tonight, so you have to check out John Schneider in the movie Adrenaline. It's a meaningful movie about never giving up. Adrenaline. Wow. 608 area code, Cannonball Run, awesome. Well, Cannonball Run, classic. You can't go, I mean, Cannonball Run 2, you know, come on.
Yeah.
All-star cast, all goofballs.
Have you ever noticed, like, most racing movies actually have great casting?
Yeah.
It's just something I tend to notice.
Yeah. Terry says, I'm not sure what this has to do with anything, but Charles Durning in Dog Day Afternoon and Walter Matthau in Failsafe. What is that?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure on that one.
Okay.
It was texted in, so I gave it to you.
None of those are racing movies.
You know the scene that I really liked in the one with Sylvester Stallone, where he's supposedly teaching the kid the ropes? It's when they're having the big race, and he goes into humming mode.
Oh, right. Right.
Where everybody suddenly realizes, uh-oh.
Yeah.
The inner monster has awoken. Don't get in his way now.
Right, yeah. Classic. All right, we got a break here. We got a bunch of texts coming in. Phone lines are open. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the best racing movies in honor of the Daytona 500, which took place yesterday. And we'll get more from you, talk or text, right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And right now, because of the Daytona 500, which was run yesterday, we're talking about racing movies. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Let's get to the phones. And we got a bunch of texts here coming in. And here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, evening, Nick. How you doing tonight?
All right. What's up?
Hey, you're talking about Days of Thunder, yeah. You know, being 30 years next year. All the cars that were in that movie, the camera cars and the three cars of the stars, they all had to qualify for the Daytona 500 or they were not allowed on the track.
Is that right?
Yep. What? I used to follow NASCAR pretty heavy, but I got out of it since the cars don't look like cars anymore. But yeah, they had to qualify in order to be on the track. They let one camera car on the track for like parade laps at the beginning of the race. Mm-hmm. But after that, if the car was going to be on the track, it had to pass NASCAR inspection and be qualified.
Wow, I didn't know that.
NASCAR started using some of their technology from the movie in the way they do the in-car cameras and stuff now.
Right.
So, yeah, but every one of them cars that was in the movie actually was in the Daytona 500 that year.
Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. But yeah. But that's the rule, right? You can't have an unqualified car on there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, would you want to be out there driving 200 mile an hour with you or me out there with a camera car?
Yeah, no. No.
I wouldn't want to be out there just in the camera car.
Right, I agree.
But anyway.
I agree with you. All right, Rich, thanks, man.
All right. Yep, no problem. Have a good evening.
Take care. Wow, that's fascinating. 847 area code sends out the text. Been a while, but in my opinion, the movie 3 was a great one. It was the story of Earnhardt Sr., and I loved it. 872 area code says, Rush is one of my favorite racing films of all time. That was Ron Howard directed that movie.
Yeah, it was really good, too.
And it made no money. It was I think it's one of Ron Howard's biggest bombs.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
But
it was a great, real story.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth was in that one.
Yeah,
one of the 9 Hemsworth brothers. So we had an enthusiastic caller before we launched this topic, talking about the movie Redline.
Yeah,
he was very excited about the movie Redline. Here's what they say about Redline. Redline has its share of fast cars and action scenes. It certainly looks like it took its inspiration from the Fast and Furious franchise. The plot is remarkably similar. It centers around some filthy rich dudes who love placing wagers on their collection of supercars. They fund a street racing circle for their own enjoyment and entertainment. The film was written and produced by auto enthusiast Daniel Sadek, who lent his own private automobile collection to the making of the movie. This is hardcore dedication to a passion. In fact, the title of this film is the name that had originally been chosen for the 2001 Fast and Furious, but was discarded prior to release in favor of the one that gained popularity. Redline turned out to be a spectacular failure and a money loser at the box office, but there are still people who think it rocks.
Or any of the cars of the guy who loaned them for the film damaged in the production?
I do not know.
Interesting answer.
I do not
to discover.
Oh.
And speaking of odd NASCAR rules, here's another one. If you don't have an in-car television camera, you can be fined for not replacing it with something of the right weight.
Oh, I see.
And you know what the fine is?
No.
Take a guess. It's 5 figures.
5 figures?
Mm-hmm.
5 grand.
5 figures.
Oh, 25 grand.
Yep.
25 grand. All
right. Yep.
Well, get your cameras then. And make sure you have it, because otherwise you're going to be dropping 25 grand. Let's see. 312-981-7200. Taxi driver Bob. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
All right.
Two movies, and then also another race car driver, which I thought whether it was they were joking when I saw some like old footage of some old race car stuff. But Herbie Lovebug, and I thought that was extremely funny when they would call the car and the car would come to them. That was quite amusing.
Well, yeah, Herbie the Lovebug. Herbie the Lovebug. I believe it was the first movie I ever saw when I was a kid. It was Herbie the Lovebug. It was either that or The Jungle Book. They both came at the same. They both came around at the same time. But Herbie the Lovebug was one of the first movies I ever saw in the theater. I loved that movie when I was a kid. I loved that movie.
Yeah, a Volkswagen is a race car. Come on now.
Yeah.
Anyways, then Dukes of Hazzard. Got to put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like I said, I was watching this like history like thing of old race car drivers. There was also a driver by the name of Dick Seaman, believe it or not. And I thought it was some kind of joke. And
but
then
it's
I looked it up and it wasn't a joke.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Bob. Thanks, man.
Take care.
There you go. Let's see. Chris in Elk Grove Village says, I'm not a huge racing guy, so it's hard for me to watch racing movies, but my favorite would have to be the movie Free Jack. Free Jack! It's an entertaining movie, a fun cast. You got Rene Russo, Anthony Hopkins, Emilio Estevez, and Mick Jagger. That movie's ridiculous. Free Jack is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Isn't it like time travel? Don't they it's time travel, right?
He just happens to be in a Indy car when it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember I saw that movie. I remember when it came out, I saw that Mick Jagger of all people, Free Jack. Ridiculous movie.
I mean, you got so excited because the name of the movie just sounded like, oh, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And
it was stupid.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
You remember the movie that came out a couple of years ago? It was based on the video game, Need for Speed.
Yes.
What did you think of it?
Didn't like it. It has made these lists. We have a couple of lists here that actually did make the
worst of all.
No, I don't know.
Not like it's a movie. Not that great. But as far as like the racing scenes, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Best racing movies, according to 815, Grand Prix, James Garner, Le Mans with Steve McQueen, Rush with Chris Hemsworth, and Winning with Paul Newman. Those seem to be the, especially the James Garner, Steve McQueen, Paul Newman movies, those are the most genuine, I think, that people really, really like. Okay, we got a break here for news, which is coming up right after we take this break. And then more racing movies, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time, and we hear a joke from my dad every Monday morning. Dan Chagru has been taking some time off, and so we're going to hear from Dan about that time he took off, and he'll be here in studio at about 4:30. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we've been talking about racing movies, and we got a bunch of texts, and people are calling in. Yesterday was the Daytona 500, and so we're talking about some of our favorite racing movies. And some of them are obscure and kind of weird, and we've been talking about some of the best ones that are classic. And if you would like to jump in for your racing movie favorites, 312-981-7200. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
How you doing?
All right.
Good morning. Stroker Ace.
Stroker
Burt
Ace.
Reynolds.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, that's
funny. A little fun in the movie.
that's definitely a racing movie. No question about it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thank you, John.
All right, Nick. Take care.
We got another fan of Stroker Ace on the text line here. Rob says, my favorite racing movie is Stroker Ace, starring Burt Reynolds. I actually think that that's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life, Stroker Ace. Truly. And what makes it even crazier is that, and I mentioned this before because we were talking about, last week we were talking about actors who almost played iconic roles and didn't. Burt Reynolds was offered the role that Jack Nicholson would eventually play and win an Oscar for in terms of Endearment. Like it was originally, you know, for Burt Reynolds, and he turned it down so he could do Stroker Ace. So you need to think about that for a second. He turned down that part in Terms of Endearment, which got Jack Nicholson an Oscar, so that he could do Stroker Ace. Uh, 214 area code says, I recall a young Mickey Rooney in a car race movie. There were old-fashioned Indy cars, and of course Mickey won the big race at the end with his car engulfed in flames, and he bailed out just before the car exploded. I don't remember that at all. Mark the Breadman says, being a huge Star Wars nerd, the pod race in Phantom Menace is my favorite racing scene. Okay. Here's Rob on WGN. Hey, Rob.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
Okay, I got three of them for you.
All right.
First, you got three classics. It's those Amazing Young Men and her Amazing Flying Machines with Tony Curtis and Terry Thomas.
Right.
Then you've got David Niven and Around the World in 80 Days. There are a couple vehicles involved in that one.
Yeah.
But the most ridiculous one, and I love it to death to this day, it's a mad, 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 mad world with Spencer Tracy, Buddy Hackett, Bill Silvers, and you name it.
Yeah, that was just on TCM Saturday night. They showed a brand new. They showed a brand new version of it, the uncut version with the Jerry Lewis scene that they had cut out. And it was, they just showed it on TCM just this past Saturday night.
That was something else. You just mentioned that you had the one with Mickey Rooney. In fact, when he was racing in that movie earlier in the movie, he was banned from the racing in the movie as his role because he ran a safety that was supposed to be like a yellow flag or something, and he T-boned a guy and killed him.
Oh, okay.
In that. And then finally, at the end, he finally gets his redemption. So.
Okay. All right, Rob, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, he mentioned a couple of them. You know, one of my favorites, it was also on TCM Saturday night after It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, they showed, it must have been Epic Comedy Night on TCM on Saturday night, because they showed It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, the uncut version, the three-hour full-on version, and then they followed it with one of my favorite movies. When I was a kid, this was one of my favorite movies ever, The Great Race, directed by Blake Edwards, starring Natalie Wood, Tony Curtis, Peter Falk, and Jack Lemmon, who plays Professor Fate in that movie. It's one of my favorite comedic performances of all time. Jack Lemmon and Peter Falk, who is his partner, he's Max, his partner, are absolutely hilarious in the movie. And it's an epic. It's like 3 hours long. At one point, Jack Lemmon plays a spoiled prince that looks exactly like Professor Fate, so he gets to play two roles in it. Keenan Wynn is in it. Vivian Vance is in it. Arthur O'Connell is in it. I love that movie and loved it so much from when I was a kid. And I just, so many big laughs in that movie. And it's a great race movie. And we've been getting some texts about The Great Race, too. 214 area code said, Tony Curtis did that silly round the world race movie at around 1965. Yeah, it was from 1965. It was called The Great Race. Blake Edwards directed it. And I'm telling you, Jack Lemmon is absolutely hilarious in the movie. And so is, you know, him, and the scenes between him and Peter Falk are spectacularly funny. I mean, I love that movie. And I really, really love Professor Fate. He was one of my favorite characters. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Adam on WGN. Hi, Adam.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Sure, man.
Just like, as you're saying this stuff, man, I am thinking about, I think it's been 8 or 9 years now. I'm going to be 32. My grandpa died, and he was the guy that kind of introduced me into all of these awesome movies, Mad, Mad, Mad World, and, you know, like you just said, The Great Race. He made me the biggest Jack Lemmon fan. I loved watching his movies. I loved just his inflections, the expressions that he used.
Yeah.
Some of these guys were so wide-ranging, and what's unfortunate sometimes to think of is they didn't really get a chance to use all of the things that they could do, you know, acting chops-wise.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys that were, you know, just slapstick kind of, you know what I mean, banana in the tailpipe type of guys, they had a lot of depth, and we're seeing that exposed now, and that's wonderful. But just to speak to what you were saying about before, man, I have to go, even though it's not like a race movie. I mean, obviously, if we're talking about Steve McQueen, you know, the man, if we're talking about that guy, we have to say the bullet chase scene with the Mustang following the Charger through San Francisco.
Right.
And I'm sure it's been talked about. And even though it kind of devolves into, you know, something that's, you know, it should have been a little bit better, the initial, you know, blipping of the throttle and the downshifts and the rev matching and them going through the hills, which is all filmed in real time.
Right.
With, I mean, and they filmed some of that stuff and using you know, techniques that had never, ever been used before in this kind of, you know, cinematic photography.
Right.
And I think what we began to understand was Steve McQueen's not only, you know, I guess a decent looking gent on film, but he also has a really, really good sense for dramatic car, you know, chase representation and how it actually looks and how cars actually look and how drivers perform when they're coming up on somebody and you're seeing them kind of dramatize it with you know, them really zooming in on, you know, the fingers of the clutched, you know, leather, you know, driving glove and these things that are going on. But ultimately, man, it's Steve McQueen and it's a Charger, you know, and a Mustang battling through the hills in San Francisco.
Right.
And there's no music. You know, that's one of the things you have to understand. There's absolutely no score going on in the background. It's just the sound of those motors and those exhausts and them downshifting and upshifting and rev matching going through there. Man, what else was I going
to
say?
You said, what says here on the screen is that you wanted to mention the movie Initial D.
Oh, yeah, and obviously I'm very young, but if we're talking about, like, racing stuff and stuff that involves not only cinema but also animation, I have to talk about the Initial D series, and thank you so much for reminding me. It was a series that was carried over, I believe, from Japan. It was made from Japanese stuff, captioned in English, I believe. And it ended up being a pretty decent deal between a generation that's probably a little bit younger than me, but I'm involved in automobiles in all aspects and generations. I can't really type stuff. I'm just kind of a fan of automobiles in general, so you have to understand that. But just Initial D was a very cool thing. It was about a guy who is trying to get a car to be able to race in Japan, kind of on a circuit within his town, I should say, and within the best drivers ever from his town. But anyway,
from what I understand, it's available on Netflix. Somebody just texted in about that. Initial D, a Japanese teen coming of age, distressed father son relationship set in the Japanese drift racing culture. It's available on Netflix. I watched it with my teenage son. It was good. Even in Japanese, it's got English subtitles. So it's available. It's out there. All right, Adam, thanks for the call and all the info. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Hey, Nick, what about Vanishing Point? That's a classic. Classic. The 1974 original Gone in 60 Seconds from the 708 area code. Those are more car chase movies than racing movies. You know, like that stuff is mostly the car chase stuff. But we're talking about racing movies, and we've got a bunch more here to talk about. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text racing movies. And we got some phone lines open as well. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And Daytona 500 was yesterday, so we're talking about racing movies. And there are a ton of them. And we're finding some obscure ones, some that I've never heard of, and then, of course, some of the classics. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Here's Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. Nick, before I get to the greatest racing movie ever made, A Silver Streak, was that mentioned?
Silver Streak?
Wasn't that with...
That's Gene Wilder Richard Pryor. Yeah, that's not a race movie. That's a train movie.
Okay. I'm mistaken.
Oh, wait. Grease Lightning with Richard Pryor. Yeah. That's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is based on a true story.
Yeah. Richard Pryor played a real guy, a real driver in that movie. That's right. Yeah, but that's Grease Lightning. That's a really good movie.
Yeah, but one thing about that, the true story is he won like the first Daytona or something, and because he was black, he couldn't win, so he had to let the second place white guy win.
Yeah.
That's a true story, but the greatest racing movie is Ben-Hur.
Well, that's a race movie. There's no question about it. It's not cars, but it certainly is a race movie.
That's how they raced back then, and those steel wheels are pretty cool, you know.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Nick. Bye-bye.
Somebody else mentioned a movie that does not have cars in it, and it's 630 area code says, what about the bike race movie with the Stone Quarry Cutters in Indiana? That's one of my favorite movies of all time. That's called Breaking Away. Breaking Away, one of my favorite movies of all time, and it concludes with a big bike race, so it is a racing movie. It's just not cars, it's bikes. And it's true. If you've never seen Breaking Away, truly, one of the best movies ever made. I love that movie. Let's see. Here is Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hi there. I think you needed a lady.
All right.
Okay, I've got four pretty big stars, but I don't have titles. In the mid-60s, Howard Hawks directed James Caan in something very early on. And in the 50s, there was a studio-type movie with Clark Gable. But then Kirk Douglas, I believe, was in Europe to do some big race movie. I'm not sure. It might have been called The Racers. I'm not sure. And then I got a real good one, a plum, if you come up with any of those titles while I'm talking. I do have the last picture that's sort of a plum that nobody's thought of yet. Have you noticed any of those titles that I mentioned?
I don't know the titles. I couldn't tell you the titles.
Okay, but yeah. I think Kirk Douglas was in Europe for his.
Okay.
Okay, here's my plum. Bonnie Bedelia.
Oh, sure. Heart Like a Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a great movie. Cha-Cha Muldowney. She plays Cha-Cha Muldowney in that movie. That is a great... She is so good in that movie.
Yeah, so we finally got a lady in there. You got a lady calling you with a lady movie.
Well, no, that's a great...
Cha-Cha Muldowney, any relation? Are you thinking of... Is that short for Shirley Muldowney?
Yeah, that's her. She was a racer.
Oh, I know that. I know the name. Her husband was a racer, too.
Yeah.
She had a rocket-powered car, right?
Yeah, they made a movie called Heart Like a Wheel, where Bonnie Bedelia from Die Hard plays her. And it's a great movie. A great movie, directed by the great Jonathan Kaplan. It's a really, really good movie. So, yeah. All right, Paula, thanks for the call.
Good night.
Okay, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, let's see. We got a bunch of people who are calling in. Here is Trucker D on WGN. Hey, D.
How you doing?
All right, what's up?
Speed Racer, man.
Yeah, I love Speed Racer. I love that movie. Everybody hates that movie. I love it.
Well, you know, like, not only just the movie, but the series. And right. I always thought that Ditka would make a great pop.
Yeah. Well, in the movie it was John Goodman, and he was great. He was perfect as Pops in that movie.
You remember the Mammoth Car?
Of course. I remember I watched Speed Racer every day when I was a kid. I loved it. And then when they made the movie, the Wachowskis made the movie... and I remember when it came out, it got demolished by the critics, and nobody went to see it. It was a major bomb, but I really like it. I'm a big fan of that movie. I think it's really good.
I used to have nightmares about the Mammoth Star.
Yeah, no, there was some great stuff.
That horn that it would make, whatever it did.
Yep.
Anyway, glad I mentioned it.
Have a good one. Take care. Yeah, Speed Racer. The thing about Speed Racer, we've talked about Speed Racer before on the show, is that... you know, the cartoon for kids, And in the opening credits, there are about 50 deaths in the opening credits. The opening credits alone, cars exploding and smashing into mountains and blowing up. And I mean, within the, you know, just the opening here, he comes, here comes Speed Race. He's a demon on wheels. Meanwhile, everybody's dying in the opening credits. It's like 900 crashes, people. And not just like crashes.
So they mean he really is a demon on wheels.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, but like, and it's not just crashes. It's like massive explosions. Like the cars like explode and it's just crazy. And that's how the show opened every day. All right. Let's see. Here's Earl on WGN. Hi, Earl.
Hi. First of all, the movie that the woman is trying to think of with James Caan was Red Line 7000.
Red Line 7000. Okay.
Yeah. And the three movies I love the most. First was Nick Adams' last film. It's an obscure film, a 67 film called Fever Heat, where he's racing a 55 Chevy on a dirt track in Iowa.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty good. Second one is pretty good. Have you ever seen Snake and Mongoose?
Yeah, years ago.
Oh, a great movie. Came out 5 years ago. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And the all-time greatest still had to be the Grand Prix. I was 8 years old in 66. My father took me to it. We went to the early viewing. 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and we loved it so much we sat through it the second time, and when we got out of the theater, it was past midnight.
Wow, there you go.
That, without a doubt, had to be the greatest movie ever made.
The greatest racing movie, Grand Prix. We talked about that one's been mentioned a bunch of times this morning because it's such a classic. It really is. All right, Earl. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Earl.
Thank you.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Hey, how about Herbie Fully Loaded with Lindsay Lohan? Oh, man. Yeah. So that was Michael Keaton. I forgot. Michael Keaton was in that movie. Matt Dillon was the bad guy. Justin Long was also in it. And, of course, Lindsay Lohan. That was you know, during the time period before Lindsay Lohan lost her mind. Before, like, she basically flushed her career down the toilet. Oh, man. 312-981-7200. Look at it. We have a bunch of texts here. 815 area code. Nick, Death Race and Fury Road, a lot of horsepower. I guess Fury Road is it's chase and a race. Because the first part of the movie is chase. The second part, they're racing to get back. And so it's a race. The second half of the movie is a race.
Yeah,
and that, of course, is one of the greatest movies ever made. That's my third favorite movie of all time.
It was so good.
I saw it 3 times in 2 days when it came out. The weekend opened, I saw it 3 times in 2 days. I saw it at the Davis, went down to Ricochet's, and had a couple of beers, went back 2 hours later and saw it again. So I saw it twice, and then the next day, I saw it again at a different theater. And I've seen it. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen Fury Road. People who are regular listeners to this show know how completely obsessed I am with. I watched it this weekend. I watched it over the weekend. I watched Fury Road over the weekend. I was just like, all right. I watched it Friday, and I never tire of it. I never tire of it. And it still blows my mind every time I watch it. I'm like, some of the stuff, the car stuff that they do, the stunts that they do in that movie, insane, absolutely insane. And very little use of green screen in that movie. Those are real guys and real stunts. Some of them, obviously, the film has been sped up.
Yeah.
You know, but those are guys jumping on cars and flipping on things. And those guys on the pole, the pole cats, those are real dudes on poles swinging back and forth. One of my favorite stories is George Miller, who is the genius director of the Mad Max movies, his dad took him in Australia, obviously he grew up in Australia, and his dad took him at a very, very young age to a circus in Australia. And he saw these guys on poles doing, you know, an act on the pole and, you know, and all this crazy, like, gymnastics and stuff on the pole.
Yeah.
And it was an image that stayed with him. And he wanted to put it in the movie. And they were like, no, you're going to have to do it. You know, you're going to have to do it CGI. And he's like, I don't want to do it CGI. And he's like, you're going to have to do it CGI. Because the special effects guys were like, you know, I don't think we're doing it. But what he didn't know, what George Miller didn't know, is that the stuntman and the stunt coordinator were working on it. And so they're out, and then he was so disappointed that he wasn't going to be able to put it in the movie, and that he really, really, really was against doing, you know, CGI. So what happened was they're there for the shooting. They're in the middle of the desert, and all of a sudden he hears these engines and he hears like motor of, you know, like a bunch of vehicles coming towards the set where they're set up, and nobody had told him. And he looked, and off in the distance were these three vehicles, and he saw the guys on the poles swinging back and forth, and he started crying. He's like, "Oh my god!"
That's
so
cool.
He got to use real guys on those poles and the pole cats.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and the crew surprised him, and he was like beside himself. He's like, "Okay, this is the greatest day ever." And so those guys on the poles, the pole cats, those are real dudes in them. And that movie is just a remarkable piece of work. I mean, just really seriously, one of the best movies ever made. So, all right, we got a break here. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to talk more about great racing movies in honor of the Daytona 500, which took place yesterday, and lots more racing to talk about here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. And coming up after the 4:30 news, Dan Chagrou is going to join us live in studio. He's been taking some time off, and we're going to talk with Dan about that time that he's been taking off. And we'll talk to him a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yesterday was the Daytona 500, so we've been talking about racing movies and some of our favorites and most memorable ones. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A bunch of texts have come in, and let's see. Tulane Blacktop, that's another one of those, more of a chase movie than a race movie. The Downhill Racer with Redford, and the marathon running movie, I believe, was called The Runner from the late 60s. Here's one. Finally, people are starting to text this in. Six Pack with Kenny Rogers. You can't go wrong with Six Pack with Kenny Rogers. You know, who's in that is... Anthony Michael Hall is in that movie. That was like before Vacation and before the John Hughes movies. He played one of his kids. And I think Diane Lane was in that movie, if I remember correctly. Six Pack. we got another Six Pack, 815 area code, Six Pack, along with Stroker Ace, Cannonball Run and 2 with Burt Reynolds. Here's a great one. 708 area code, Munster Go Home is one of my favorites. One of my favorites of all time. That's true. That is indeed a racing movie. It also happens to be the Munsters, but it's indeed a racing movie.
You were correct. Diane Lane,
yeah.
Aaron Gray, and Barry Corbin were also in it.
Barry Corbin, I love, yeah. Barry Corbin. Take us to DEFCON 5 and get the president on the horn. That's my Barry Corbin from War Games. I love Barry Corbin. He's one of my favorite character actors. He was on Northern Exposure too.
Yeah,
but yeah, I love him in War Games.
he's great on The Ranch.
He's awesome.
I love him.
I think he's great. I've loved Barry Corbin. Barry Corbin's been one of my favorite character actors. My God, Urban Cowboy.
Yeah,
he's fantastic in Urban Cowboy. He's one of those guys, man. I just. You know, we were remiss the last time we talked about character actors, and we were talking about character actors that you don't know their name, but you know,
yeah,
their face. We didn't bring up Barry Corbin. I can't believe I didn't bring up Barry Corbin. All right. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark. Mark?
Morning, guys.
Hi.
Morning. The Last American Hero with Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget that? My favorite actor.
I've been listening to you guys for half hour, and I'm like, nobody's getting this one?
Yeah, I can't believe it. Last American Hero, Jeff Bridges. Yeah, I should have thought of that one. He's my favorite actor, and I love that movie.
Yeah, and then the other one was, when my kids were younger, I got dragged to a movie, and I didn't want to see it, but it was Cars.
Oh, yeah, the Pixar animated Cars movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and then they made a couple of sequels to that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
That Last American Hero was a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Terrific movie. Thanks for bringing that one up, Mark. Have a good morning, okay?
All right. You too.
All right. There you go. 773 area code says, the very much underappreciated Need for Speed. 479 area code. That Mickey Rooney 50s flick is called The Big Wheel. Oh, for people who are going crazy trying to figure out what the name of the Mickey Rooney winning the race and the car blows up. I totally forgot about this movie. It just popped into my head. Would Death Proof with Kurt Russell be count as a racing movie? Nah. Well, I mean, no. I mean, it's a great movie.
I'll give it car movie.
Yeah, it's a great car movie. No question about it. That one's better than Free Jack.
Yeah,
it is better than Free Jack. It certainly is better than Free Jack.
Yeah, I think we found our bottom of the barrel.
You know what was really funny was, you know, that when Grindhouse came out, I'm not, as we talked about this morning, because we, you know, Jim and I reviewed a Robert Rodriguez movie. I'm not a fan. I'm not a big fan of Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, okay.
And when Grindhouse came out, I was like, I didn't like Planet Terror at all. I was like, I didn't like,
oh, yeah.
Didn't like Planet Terror at all. And then, like, Robert Rodriguez made, like, some goofy, silly movie. But then Tarantino made a real movie. Like, Death Proof is like a real movie. And you can't go wrong with Kurt Russell. You know, put Kurt Russell in anything, and it's automatically good. Brian says Tulane Blacktop. We're getting a lot of those. Oh, here's an interesting one. 815 area code. The World's Fastest Indian with Anthony Hopkins. Says 815 area code is one of my favorite movies. That's a really good movie. About 7 people saw that movie. But it's really good. 204 area code says Canada Pat here in Winnipeg. And the area code 204 is in Manitoba. Snake and Mongoose from 2013 is a great movie. It stars Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy. I wasn't expecting much, but it was well acted, had a great story. And they got the actual race car haulers that Don Prudhomme had just restored. 706 area code says Shirley Muldowney was the first female champion of professional top fuel drag racing, not jet powered. These cars used engines burning exotic fuel, making 8,000 HP. It's very dangerous work. Very accurate movie about her breaking the gender barrier of that motorsport. Yeah, that again, it's called Heart Like a Wheel. And the great Bonnie Bedelia. Everybody knows her. Everybody knows her from Die Hard as John McClane's wife in Die Hard. And she's so great in that. She's a terrific actress, Bonnie Bedelia. She really is. But Heart Like a Wheel is really just a really wonderful movie with a terrific performance from her. Not a racing movie, but how about The Road Warrior? I guess that fits into the, you know, the Mad Max world. 920 area code says 1967's Hell On. I don't know that one. Hell On. 706 area code, Steve McQueen's Le Mans was his love letter to motorsport. The racing portion was real footage from his personal Le Mans effort. Yeah, that was almost a documentary, the way it was made. It was almost a documentary. And I'm really surprised nobody, you know, and you mentioned this one off the air, Ben. Nobody mentioned Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Or any of them.
Any of them.
There's like 8 of them, right? Or 7 of them or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know. I love them, though. I love those movies. I especially, the first one, I remember when the first one came out, I gave it like a great review and everybody else trashed it. And the thing about the first Fast and the Furious was that it's Point Break. It's the same plot as Point Break.
Yeah.
It's essentially, yeah. It's exactly the same, it's almost exactly the same plot as Point Break. And, you know, I don't compare the two movies because Point Break's a masterpiece. Point Break's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the greatest movies ever made. But I like Fast and Furious. And I'll tell you, I'm trying to remember which Fast, because they all blend together.
I could probably tell you which one.
The fifth one, if I remember correctly, the fifth one was my favorite.
When they went down to South America?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
What's the one where the car jumps from building to building? Like it's in a skyscraper and he jumps out of one building across into another.
Oh, is that
the fifth one?
I think that was the sixth one.
Okay.
Yeah,
see, I'm getting them all confused. What about the one? See, I don't even know. All I know is that I think they're awesome. I think all those movies are awesome. And what about, have you seen the trailer for the one with Statham and The Rock?
I can't wait.
It's going to be fantastic. It looks so ridiculous. What is the one where they're dragging the giant safe?
Yeah. That was 5.
Okay, that's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's the one I loved.
Yeah, I think that's
where they were stealing the drug dealer's money.
Yeah. That was I like that one. But those are funny.
And they pulled a fast one because The Rock's character thinks he's got him with the money, and then he opens the safe and goes,
"Yeah,
oh.
that was the comeback one because it kind of died off with 3 and 4, And then they brought all of the characters from the previous ones together.
Because the third one was Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
Which was not, I mean, it didn't really have any of the main characters in it.
It didn't and until the very end in the credits.
Right. Yeah. And then the fourth one was Fast and Furious, where they suddenly brought Michelle Rodriguez back from the dead. And that's, you're right. The fifth one was the major comeback one, because it was, and it still might be the best of the series. So, God, those movies are so stupid, and I love them all. All right, let's take a break here. We've got some weather here, and then we're going to break for more. And then we'll wrap up the whole conversation about racing movies because of the Daytona 500.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch your band run. Keep your foot hard on the devil. Some devil mind him breaks.
That's actually a chase movie, not a race movie. Although it does open with semi trucks racing.
Uh-huh.
That's the opening. That's the opening scene.
Whole thing starts and ends at a racetrack.
Exactly right. And of course, it's legendary. I mean, that movie is just legendary. And immediately, that song. I mean, as soon as you hear the opening of it, you're like, man, Smokey and the Bandit rules.
Uh-huh.
It was really funny. My old producer Andy Herman, who worked with me, for many years, I discovered that he had never seen Smokey and the Bandit, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, how have you not seen Smokey and the Bandit?
Yeah.
So I made him watch it, and then he gave his review and report on it.
I mean, I get not seeing Smokey and the Bandit 3, Smokey is the Bandit.
Yeah,
but
yeah. And Smokey and the Bandit 2, which is terrible, which is where they're transporting the pregnant elephant.
Yeah, I try not to think about that.
It's terrible. But the first one rules. First one rules. And Jackie Gleason, please.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So I love that movie.
What was the other one that they did? Burt Reynolds was in it, but it was Dean Martin, Sammy Davis.
That's Cannonball Run. Those are the Cannonball Run movies.
All right.
Yeah, those are both Cannonball Run movies.
Because you do know there was a real Cannonball C2C Memorial Dash.
Yes, absolutely.
It existed.
Yeah, yeah.
So Brock Yates.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. As a Carn driver, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
But I remember reading about that, and it's like, these people were insane.
Yeah, nuts.
They did what most of us would have loved to have tried to do just once, but most of us are too chicken to do because we'd get caught and get tickets and never be able to drive again.
That's right. That's right. But it made for two ridiculous movies. Hey, look at this. It's Eddie Volkman, everybody. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, how are you, Nick?
All right, buddy, what's up?
I guess somebody mentioned earlier those magnificent men and their flying machines, but that was a great childhood memory for me because my dad he loved his German heritage, and when the part came up about the that movie would never fly today, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But with all the stereotypes in it, with the French lover stopping his plane to make love in the French countryside.
Right. And,
and then the Germans didn't know how to fly, and they'd march around and even make like marching noises, the way someone like boomboxing, but it's a guy with march around, and he said, we don't know how to fly. He goes, we'll do it like we do everything in the German army, from the Book of Instructions, which had my dad laughing. My dad laughed for like 10 minutes in the theater. People were like, why is he still laughing? Because from his heritage. That stuck with our family for years. My dad would just, anytime something came up, he'd say, the Book of Instructions. So,
that's good.
Stuck with
that's
the Volkman family. So
that's great.
Say hi to David Jennings there.
Hey,
my old buddy.
How are you, man?
Good.
Listen,
ask him about Philadelphia stories.
Oh, no. Those are never to be told. Do you remember the old Lufthansa commercial? It was a supposed Lufthansa commercial. The line was, Lufthansa wants you to think about Germany. Zinc device about Germany. That it's some of us have warped senses of humor.
Yeah.
So that's why that all rings right. true.
All right, Eddie. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Be well.
Right, have a great day. All right. Bye.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's one that we haven't mentioned. How the hell did we not mention Talladega Nights?
The Ballad of Ricky Bobby?
Yeah. How did it not? I mean, we're almost done talking about this.
Because it had Will Ferrell in it.
It's a great movie.
It's fantastic.
It's a great movie. Shake and Bake.
I'm driving for me.
I love that movie. And you know who's really funny? You know who's really funny in that movie? She's got a smaller role, but like she steals it, is Molly Shannon. Molly Shannon is hilarious in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
As the drunk, horny wife of one of the business guys. Formula One great driver documentary called Senna. We've had a few of those. Yep. Senna. Yep. Speed Zone was Cannonball Run 3, but it was so bad they changed the title so it wouldn't seem like a Cannonball Run movie. Hell on Wheels with Marty Robbins from 1967. Campy as hell, but great vintage footage. Keith in Kansas says, how about Eat My Dust starring Ron Howard?
Was there ever a film done or a documentary done about Dale Earnhardt?
Yeah. I think there's like two of them, if I'm not mistaken. We mentioned one a little bit earlier.
Yeah, okay.
Somebody texted in with it.
And then 630 area code says, A Day at the Races with the Marx Brothers. Get your Tootsie Frootsie ice cream. Yeah.
David, I don't know if you knew this, but Nick and I talked about it last week when we were talking about great sports moments. You've seen
in real life.
Yeah, in real life. Yeah. And I was sitting turn four when Earnhardt hit the wall.
I was watching something on ESPN, and I think it was part of one of those documentaries. And that day took a lot out of NASCAR.
Yeah.
That took a tremendous, I mean, that cut right to its soul.
Well, we were talking about that earlier. And then I just found there's a movie called the Dale Earnhardt Story, which is a 2004 television movie that was produced by ESPN. So there's one of them. Like, I think there's at least two. There were two of them.
Yeah, I think there was two that I saw when I looked earlier today.
Yeah. And then somebody mentioned Speedway with Elvis. And then, of course, Viva Las Vegas with Elvis.
You know something we also didn't mention?
What's that?
Cars.
No, Cars got mentioned.
Okay.
It did.
Cars 2.
Yep. No, we mentioned. Yeah, we mentioned it. Somebody called up with that the Pixar Cars movie
and the one the snail Turbo.
Turbo!
I totally forgot about Turbo. I totally forgot about Turbo.
Ha! Got you with one.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm getting better at this.
Here's Philip on WGN. Hey, Philip.
Hey, how are we doing this morning?
All right.
Has anybody talked about the movie Stroker Ace?
Yes, it's come up several times this morning.
Oh, it has? All right. Well, I just got up, so.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Philip.
No problem. Have a good morning.
Bye. Take care. Stroker Ace. Why does Stroker Ace keep coming up? Have you seen Stroker Ace?
I have not.
It's one of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah. I don't know.
Really, truly, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And it's come up like nine times this morning when we're talking about racing movies.
You know what else we missed?
What?
American Graffiti.
Well, I guess that's because there's street racing.
In
yeah,
there.
Sure. I mean, if they're going to count Fast and the Furious, which is about street racing, then you may as well count American Graffiti. Well, then in that case, too, let's throw Dazed and Confused in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because they do the, I'm going to blow your doors clean off. So Dazed and Confused. I've only seen that movie a couple times, Ben. Just a couple. Couple thousand. I know basically every line of dialogue. I can also.
So, in other words, the theater has a special seat with your name engrained
on
it.
I'll tell you what, when it was playing in the mid to late 90s at Bruin View every Thursday night at midnight, we went every week. We went every week. I must have seen it at the Bruin View like 30 times at midnight. If you were looking for my friends and I on a midnight on a Thursday night, just go right to the Bruin View. And that's what we would do. And I've seen it, I can't even tell you the number of times. If you were to play any song off that soundtrack, any song off of that soundtrack, I can tell you exactly what scene that song is played in. It's ridiculous how much I've seen that movie. One of my favorite movies of all time.
See, I'm trying to find ones that we just would not hit at all. How about Thunder in Carolina?
Thunder in Carolina? I don't know.
Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not.
Rory Calhoun
Alan Hale Jr., and Connie Hynes.
Wow.
It was 1960.
I do not know that. Rory Calhoun?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember him. He was in a movie called Motel Hell. You ever see that movie, Motel Hell?
I have not, but he played Farmer Vincent. I know of it. Yeah.
He played Farmer Vincent, and he made sausages and beef jerky out of humans. It's a really wonderful movie.
Charming.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. Okay, we've got a break here. We've got a break.
Will you have Chianti or red wine with the with the brain?
Exactly. We're going to take a break here, and then Dan Shagru is going to join us. He took some time off. We're going to find out and catch up with him. And that's coming up right after we break here for the news. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here till 5. It's Monday morning. That means in just a few minutes, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. Now, you may have noticed over the past week or so, or a little bit longer than that, that Dan Shagru, a regular producer, has taken some time off, and he wanted to come on the air and tell us a little bit about what's been going on. And so, hi, Dan.
Hi, guys. Good morning, everybody.
It's weird to have you in the studio here.
It is very strange to be in the studio.
And I'm looking through the glass, and there's a different person sitting where you usually sit.
I got to tell you, my lovely wife, Eileen, is here with me. Yeah. And we were listening to you on the way in, and it was very surreal.
Yeah, I bet.
It was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So this is what it's like on the other side of the radio at this hour. So.
It's really weird to, you know, like whenever I take a morning off, I tend not to tune in. Not that the people who work for me aren't great, and it's just weird. It's weird. I'm like, why? I should be there,
right?
And it just seems a little strange.
And you end up talking to yourself, like, yeah. Then you're like, oh wait,
I'm not on the air.
There's not a microphone actually talk into. Nobody can hear me talk.
You wanted to come on the show to talk about, you know, because obviously people have been, you know, sending texts and calling in and saying, where's Dan? So what's been going on?
What's going on? So, well, first off, thank you everybody for doing that. That's very sweet and kind of you. I have decided to leave WGN Radio and it is a bittersweet moment. A couple weeks ago, I reached out to you and I had mentioned how I wasn't feeling comfortable doing You Big Dummy or Out of Context anymore. And I just... was kind of having an issue with it, and that led to a conversation we had where I mentioned how I was getting exhausted and more so than usual, and you know, you're not sleeping too well and you're only getting a couple hours of sleep, and you know, obviously anybody who works this shift or is up this shift knows the toll it can take on your body and your mind and emotionally. And, you know, I mentioned to you, like, you know, man, it might be time to take a step away and get a good night's sleep. And, you know, after talking it over with my wife and praying on it and thinking on it and just think this is a good time to bid adieu to the overnights.
Well, You got to do what you got to do, man.
Yeah.
And that's first and foremost, you know, your health, your mental health and all that stuff has to take priority.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that I'm devastated, because I am. You're the best producer I've ever worked with, man.
Thank you.
And you know, you've added over the years immeasurably to this show.
Thank you.
Most professional, most courteous, best producer I've ever worked with. And the content that you've provided to this show over the years is, like I said, immeasurable. And I know everybody who's listening right now is going to miss you. And, but you know, again, this is what's best for you. You have to do that. Now, you've been here, you were just telling me off the air, total of,
15, 16 years, depending on how you look at it.
Internship and stuff.
Internship. I was the summer internship 2002. Graduated Bradley University in 2003, and was fortunate within a little bit of time to start doing part-time work, and did part-time work until 2008. It was a very good year, because that's when I met Eileen.
Mm.
And that's also when I started producing Steve and Johnny.
Yeah. Now, what was the first shows that you produced here? Let's go back.
Yeah,
let's go back.
Let's go back
to the interning part first.
Absolutely. So back then, so back when we had interns.
Yeah.
So
you remember those days?
Yeah.
You can make them do anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I did. There was two interns. There was the morning show intern for Spike. And then there was the rotating intern, where we split between, you did Kathy and Judy for 2 months. You did John Williams for 2 months. And then you also worked on the, review show, the 720 review show.
Oh, yeah. Used to follow my show.
Yeah, you should follow your show, which was the best clips of the day.
Right.
And, you would, you know, people would send in and be like, oh, this was a really good interview from so and so in time. And, you would put it together on CART, for people who don't know what those are. Those are 8-track machines.
And Ben is shaking his head.
Ben knows.
You've worked with those before, haven't you, Ben? Yeah.
So, and you had to do it in real time. So that was kind of fun. You know, now everybody, you know, knows digital studios and everything's at the drop of a hat and you could fix a mistake and no problem. But like, if I didn't hit a button at the exact right moment, I had to start over and do it about 20 minutes again.
Yeah.
But had a wonderful summer doing that, and one of the highlights of my career, which you can appreciate, was we used to have producer day at the Skybox.
Yeah.
And so Andy Mazur, who's a Bradley graduate, so I had gotten to know him a little bit beforehand, was the third man in the booth at that time, and you know, we would get to meet Pat and Ron at some point during the game.
Yeah.
And Andy would slip them the names of the guys so Pat could read them on air, and Andy got my name right, you know, made sure to pronounce it phonetically for the guys. And so, you know, Pat's reading him off and he goes, Dan Shugrue. And Sano goes, Shugrue, that's a fine name. I was just like, that's it. There wasn't a mic drop, but I could have dropped right there. And went back to school and, you know, mentioned to Kurt Vanderaw, who was in charge of the program at the time.
Yeah. Kurt, great guy.
Great man.
Great guy.
You know, like, hey, I hope you'll be back here in the summer. And sure enough, the slot for Let's Talk Gardening into Pet Central opened up.
Right.
Mike Novak and Steve Dale. And that was 7 to 9 on Saturday nights, mm-hmm. and that's how I got started.
And then eventually you got the overnights.
Eventually got the overnights, you know, did, had the great pleasure of doing every shift under the sun at different times, different holidays. And then part of the station responsibility is called something called the Emergency Closing Center.
Yes.
So the scroll that you see at the bottom of the TV, we help run that. And Katie, the overnight person, runs that. And Katie Steele, at that time, was running it. And they gave her a day off every week to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sunday night and a Monday morning following your shift was the Steve and Johnny's short shift, the 2 to 5.
Right.
And they brought me on to produce that shift. And then
when Katie left,
I took over.
Yeah, it was funny because we talked, with our bosses Todd and Steph about this, you know, and it was funny because we started talking about how many producers that Steve and Johnny had.
Yeah,
and it's mind blowing. Because we just kept naming names.
Yeah,
we were sitting here talking about, you know, the situation with you and you deciding to leave the station, and we're like, let's see if we can remember all the producers that Steve and Johnny had. And just name after name after name after name after name popped up. So, but anyway. Well, you know, when I was really happy because, there, you know, when I was finally given this shift.
Yes.
After all the years that, you know.
What did Cochran put, a 29-year overnight sensation?
Exactly, 29-year overnight sensation when I finally got the full-time overnight gig. After filling in on every shift, as you mentioned, and working the weekends since, I mean, I got my first show in 1998.
Yeah.
So I'd been working Fridays and Saturdays and eventually Sundays all that time. And then finally, when I got this gig, I was really happy because you were producing for Bill.
Yeah.
And you made the decision to stay on the overnights with me, and that was a big deal for me, you know, because, you know, you're the best, and I was worried that I was going to lose you, you know, and you were going to, you know, go to the middays with Bill and Wendy because you were working with him, but mm-hmm. then you said nope, I'm going to stay with you,
yeah,
and the partnership has been amazing,
yeah, been a great run, man.
You know, as it's 5 years we've been doing it full time, and then years before that, as I filled in for Steve and Johnny, and it's always been an unbelievable pleasure to work with you, because you're not only are you really, people love you on the air, that you're funny and you add so much to the conversation, but behind the scenes, you know, the stuff that you provide for this show, the content, the lining up of guests, the organization, everything that you've done, you are beyond professional. Like, beyond, it's amazing. And I know that even now you're helping out with this transition.
Right.
And this is not necessarily for you to do that, but you are.
Right.
And here's the reason why I know that you're going to do that and help out with the transition so it goes smooth. Because for the time being, Ben's going to be producing the show now. But I know that your number one priority is the show, and it always has been. It always has been, and that's one of the reasons why you're such a great producer. You care about what happens, you know, what comes out of this radio station. You do. You truly, truly do. And you care so much, in fact, that I think that has something to do with the stress levels that are applied upon yourself. You know what I mean? Because you care so deeply that it affects you, and so. You got to do what you got to do, and I know that, you know, when I say that I'm going to miss you terribly, and that's an understatement.
Same here.
And I appreciate all the other stuff that you do for the show and all the other stuff. I also appreciate the fact that you gave me a ride to and from work every morning.
Yeah.
Lots
of good show prep.
Yeah, lots of good show prep and all that stuff. All right, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Because I think we need to hear a joke.
We do need to hear a joke. So, when we set this up and we're like 4:30, I'm like, we can't not do your dad's joke.
Right.
That's automatic.
It's automatic. And so that's, in case you just tuned in, Dan Shugru, my great producer, has decided to leave WGN after about 16 years working here, 5 years on my show. And 10 years on the overnight. We're going to miss you. We're going to miss you big
absolutely.
Time. Dan. And you were just a credit to your gender.
Well, thank you.
No, I was quoting Warren Zevon. I have no idea why I just quoted Warren Zevon. All right. We're going to take no idea what's going on now. We got a break. Okay. And after the break, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and then we'll wrap up the show. And, Dan Shugru is here, making the sad announcement. But we got to move on. All right. Let's take a break. The news is up next. Or not the news. What the hell is wrong with me? I don't know. All right, my dad's up next with a joke.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro.
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
All right. That's right. It's a jokey, jokey time. Every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke. And we are being joined by my ex-producer now, Dan Shugru, who has just announced that he will be leaving WGN to all of our disappointment. But, you know, a new chapter lies ahead, and you got to do what you got to do. And we all respect that. And so my dad is going to tell a joke, which I think is appropriate right now. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
Good, good. I'd like to, you know, thank Dan and his family, and they do a great job. And I wish him the best.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Giglio. It's been such a pleasure becoming your friend over the last couple of years.
Thank you.
And he sees your dad a lot, too. They cross paths a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Got the same barber.
Exactly.
That's right. All right. How you doing, Dad? You good?
I'm doing good. Right, I'm ready to go.
How's Mom?
Mom is great.
Okay, great. You got a joke. Let's hear it.
I got two guys were sitting on a park bench discussing their likes and dislikes. The one man said, I'm afraid to fly. I don't believe planes are safe. That doesn't make sense, his friend said. You think trains are safe? Last week there was a great big train wreck. About 300 people were killed. No kidding. What happened? He said, a plane fell on it.
All right. All right.
That's a strong one, Dad. That's a very strong
one. All right.
All right, buddy. See you later.
Ned.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Take care. There you go. My dad's joke. That's a good one, man. You want to hit the thing? Thank you.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
I don't know. That one struck me as very funny.
Well, that reminds me of one of my favorite stories involving Eileen is that we were in Arizona on a trip, and we had the option of going in a hot air balloon or a helicopter ride over the Grand Canyon. And I was just like, we can't go in the hot air balloon and we could die. And Eileen's like, we can't go in a helicopter. We're going to die. So we came back and forth on going back and forth. And of course she won.
Yeah.
But I remember I sat in the middle of that basket the entire time. And the guy goes, you know, sir, you can come to the edge. It'll be fine. I'm like, nope, I am good right here.
I'd have done the same thing. Yeah. I would have done the same. Actually, I wouldn't have gone up, quite frankly. Yeah, yeah. I'm scared looking out this window right now. So for those of you who may have just tuned in, Dan Shugru, my great producer, is leaving WGN for personal reasons. You just wanted to say, you wanted to say a few things before you take off?
Yeah, I just wanted to spend a few minutes and thank a whole bunch of people, because obviously, you know, as you mentioned, you don't make it 16 years without a lot of help. First off, I want to thank God. I have always been very open about my faith and my religion here, and appreciated I worked at a radio station that allowed me to express that. And the last 16 years have been a blessing in the most beautiful, truest form. And so I owe him so much for this opportunity, and will forever cherish this little bit and this opportunity to work at this radio station. On a much lower level, I'd like to thank you, Nick.
Wait. Hold on. I'll tell you what, though. I come in second to God. That's pretty good, man. That's pretty good.
As we talked about, we've had so much fun nights over the last 5 years, and so many great things, and, you know, the zaniness and the things that pop out, you know, just, you know, who knew a throwaway bump on a Friday morning could turn into Fly James Friday.
I know.
And things like that. And just this thing, those are the things I'll miss the most and cherish the most. And just really appreciate your friendship.
Thanks,
man. The good times we've had.
Yeah.
I want to thank Esmeralda and Vic. Vic, who woke up for this, so God bless you, Vic. I've never been part of an award-winning team, and I don't know if I will ever be part of an award-winning team again.
We did win an award, didn't we?
We won an award, and that's kudos to those guys. Those guys are such great coworkers and to be with, and, you know, obviously there's too many to mention of all the people that have worked those traffic and news shifts, but it's you know, everybody was a professional and everybody was great. We had so much fun getting to know them, whether it was a one-off shift on a holiday or years and years and years. I want to take a moment and thank our bosses, Todd Manley, Stephanie Menendez, who have been so supportive, not only the last couple of weeks as I decided just to get a good night's rest and overcome the exhaustion, but also just great people and make this radio station run, and are wonderful, wonderful human beings. And then also mention Kurt Vanderall, who I mentioned first hired me and was a great mentor for many years here at the radio station. I want to thank our guests. You know, obviously these hours aren't the best and the easiest to come on, but they were always a plum and agreeing to give their time, and it was always a win-win, which was something I was always very proud of, that that, you know, we got something from them, but we also gave something to them. But a few folks that I want to mention: Tom Appel, who's literally been with me since the beginning because he goes back to the Steve and Johnny days, Herb Weissbaum, Dan Feinberg, Jim Ryan, Rod Pyle, guys who've always were aim and ace to fill in whenever we needed them, and always provided great content. I've had the pleasure of working with pretty much every host here at the radio station in some form of capacity, but to shout out a few, Brian Noonan, my guy, such a blast working with Brian. And then, as I mentioned, my first two hosts, Steve Dale and Mike Novak, who completely different personalities, but in a way taught me everything I ever needed to know about the radio business. Bill Leff, who we had a great couple years together, and then, of course, the incomparable Steve and Johnny. I talked to him yesterday, and they were sitting on their porch and playing the guitar and just relaxing, which is exactly how I like to think of them these days. And they are as good as human beings as you think they are. They are even better. I want to thank my family. I want to thank my uncles and aunts who would lend me a car or a couch to sleep on when I was in between shifts or had crazy weekends or just needed a place to chill out for a couple hours in between shifts. I want to thank my parents who did not balk when I said I wanted to try this radio thing. And we're always supportive and, you know, have babysat and done so much to try to make this work. And it did work, and it worked beautifully. So thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. I love you very much. I want to thank my daughters, Emily and Olivia, who are the light of my life and who just every day give me something beautiful to look forward to. I want to thank my wife, Eileen, who has sacrificed so many sleepless nights taking care of those daughters while I'm here goofing around and having a good time, and who's my rock. And I love you so much, and thank you for everything. And then finally, I want to thank the listeners. You guys are the lifeblood of this radio station. You are this radio station, and we couldn't obviously physically or financially do it without you, but we wouldn't do it without you because you are what we are, and we are fans, and we are family, and we are great. So thank you for all the times you called and tell me about your grandkids or your cats or just to tell me you had a good day or a bad day. It has been an absolute pleasure throughout. So thank you very much. And I'm looking at the clock, and it is time to we've got to hit news. So coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
You just can't let it go, can you?
No,
you cannot.
I don't want it to be late, man. I don't want to be late. So thank you, everybody. Thank you all so very much.
Damn, thanks, man.
Thank you.
I love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
Okay. All right. We're gonna take a break because I want to make the news on time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning, and it'll be Tuesday morning. And again, I want to thank the great Dan Shugru for all the work that he did. We're going to miss him.